Hello, everybody.
Hello.
I'm Chris.
I'm Craig.
I'm Jack.
Yay.
Woohoo. Apparently we're live.
Yeah, we are live. Yeah.
How many people are listening now? None.
Waiting for that information to come through. Two.
Three.
Two. Hello.
Can somebody listening tell us whether they can hear us?
Yeah, no, I think they can hear us.
We're here to watch Omen
3. I don't care what you think.
The last of our trilogy. Yeah. And the Monday before Christmas.
It's fucking me already.
This time next week, I'll all be over.
Four people. Woohoo!
We've doubled it in less than a minute.
And so I, haven't even clicked in yet. Sorry.
So we're sitting on the 20th Century Fox logo.
Love that.
And we're going to press play. Now.
Not yet. Hang on.
Middle button.
Middle button? All right, here we go.
Come on.
Going to press play now.
Okay.
Yes, we're on.
We're on. Okay. Omen 3, or actually, The Final Conflict. Sorry.
I think we'll have more of them tonight, but it makes a start.
Nice.
Oh, look at that.
This is, I think, a really nice opening sequence, and possibly the best of the opening sequences of all three films.
Mm-hmm. I've got a big drilling thing coming at you.
Drilling thing coming at you.
Yeah.
Well, the whole story of finding the knives and handing them over, I think, is handled brilliantly. So this is the old museum after the fire.
Yeah.
From Omen 2, a few years later. Oh, quite a few years later.
Chicago, Illinois.
Now,
well, what's... 3 years later in terms of...
Yeah.
But he's managed to age 20 years.
Yeah.
So you'll sound a little bit like you're taking helium, apparently, tonight.
Says who?
Says Graham Kimmelwhite, tell you about.
Hi, Graham Kimmelwhite, you can talk.
Ron Logan is saying, yeah, he's quite fey. Well, Ron Logan is also saying, hiya, pals. Hello, Ron.
Hiya, Ron. How are you doing?
How are you, Ron? So here we go.
Right.
We're in business.
We have lots of rocks.
Different, we don't seem to be getting a picture on Facebook Live tonight at the moment. I don't know why.
Oh, no.
But it doesn't matter.
Oh, and now it's now they've made their way to a pawn shop.
Is this related to the fact that Jack only turned up 15 minutes before
broadcast
time?
Yeah, before it was made to turn on,
I was there more than an hour before, wasn't I?
Yeah. That was UNICEF again. I've just flown back from Rwanda to be here tonight for this. So we're watching Omen 3. So I have a question.
Jack Henry's found them and gone.
Hey.
I've got a question for you.
Ask it.
So is there a creative talent that astrides all three of the Omen films? Or not really?
Mace Newfield.
Who's that?
Producer.
So it's the same producer on all of them?
I think so, yeah. I think Mace Newfield was the producer of them all.
Okay.
But no, there's the writers are all different.
Mm-hmm.
The directors are all different.
Mm-hmm.
That's your answer, really.
Oh. And do you think that... there is a uniformity of tone across the films?
No. Yeah. No, I don't think there's uniformity of tone. The tone between two and three certainly are pretty different. Because this is edging towards a TV movie.
Do you think?
Yeah, it is a bit, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think this is some of the nastiest of them.
Yeah, but I mean, in terms of the look and the cinematography and whatever...
Right. There's the boy from Fingerbob on the left.
Revaginate the mouse.
I beg your pardon.
Revaginate the mouse? How does that work?
He's not happy about that, is he? He's not buying. He's not buying in a hurry.
No, just like, how much you want from nothing? I'll take seven.
Thank you, Mr. Fox. Now, Andrew Birkin, who's is associate producer and co-wrote the screenplay, is an interesting man, and I've written some notes on him.
Wow.
I have them here. Andrew Birkin is now in his 70s. Uh-huh. He's the brother of Jane Birkin.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Who's Jane Birkin?
Je t'aime.
Je t'aime.
All right.
Do.
It's early for that, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I love
put
it.
Put your fingers away.
Where do you want me to put them? He started off as a runner at the age of 17 on the film 2001.
Mm-hmm.
Then he actually took over a lot of the special effects sequences for filming.
Did he not?
No, Richard Donner was...
There he is.
Richard Donner was exec producer.
Ah.
Yeah. Okay.
So maybe he did have some hand in it. Uh-huh. Anyway, he went on to write some interesting films. Remember when David Putnam was interesting before he became Dame Putnam of Worthington?
Is he not interesting?
He wrote for him The Pied Piper and Slade in Flames.
Wow.
Not bad. And The Pied Piper stars Jack Wilde. A very strange film.
Uh-huh.
Slade in Flames is a great film. Slade in Flame.
Slade in Flame, yeah. He wrote The Lost Boys, you know, the one with Ian Holm about J.M. Barrie. It was in the BBC.
Oh,
right. Really
so
good.
Not there.
No. But it's actually a really good film. It's a really good
afraid to face
drama.
Me, Dave.
No, I've never seen the film The Lost Boys.
Have you not?
No,
it's a fantastic film.
I really
film.
Should.
Yeah. Oh, have I?
Dang.
I've not seen Near Dark. I think I might have seen The Lost Boys. Is that the one that's got Echo and the Bunnymen singing people?
Uh-huh.
That's true. Yeah, I have seen that then, yeah.
We had a friend at school called David, and one of the characters called David, and there's a sequence where the vampires go, hey, you're a
afraid to face me, David. And they also sort of keep whispering, David, David. So we did that a lot.
See, when you do that with your pointy ears and your big baldy napper, do you know who you look like? That guy for fucking Salem's Lot. That's who you look like.
But also a little bit like, hello, it's Fatherline of Fandor. Being creepy.
Maybe back when you were twice the man you are now.
Back when I was twice.
He also wrote or co-wrote the very good short film Srednev Ashtar, which got an Oscar nomination.
Wow.
And he wrote King David, The Name of the Rose, Perfume, which is a really good film.
Uh-huh.
And he wrote and directed The Cement Garden, which is a little wank.
By the way, we've got quite a lot of stuff going on in the information exchange.
Good. Craig. That's what I'd like to hear. Well, you're getting some from me.
Yeah,
old school written.
Look, the Thorn logo looks like bollocks.
Should we take a photo of that? Well, it does a bit.
It's big.
Or a big alien's face. I think we should take a photograph of that and put that on the interweb.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah.
You can deal with that bit. Right, so can I just... Mike Murafushi says, Happy Christmas.
Hi, Mike.
Happy Christmas. William D. Briggs says, you're talking about knives, so I'm guessing it's not the Likely Lads. Ah, a bit of colour from Ron Logan. And maybe we could offer some advice here. While you guys chat, I will be making a lovely sausage casserole. My tip is just a little hint of curry powder.
That's a good one, yeah.
Just a little hint of curry powder.
And some sausages.
Yeah.
And some sausages.
And maybe some Worcestershire sauce.
Yeah, Worcestershire sauce. Yeah, it makes every dish better, actually.
Worcestershire.
Doesn't... what's his name from Jurassic Park? Sam Neill.
Yeah.
He looks a bit like the young Gordon Brown there, doesn't he?
Mm,
oh.
He does.
Except he's less frightening.
He's less awful.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. He doesn't have a bong arm. Mike Murafushi said he watched Omen 3 on a cropped YouTube, so it was mainly screens full of empty rooms and people's chests.
Well, see, I think this actually looks quite nice in this print. It's not bad.
Mm.
My memory of it is that it looked pretty ropey, but that's mostly to do with the fact that I watched it on VHS for years. Looks quite nice there.
Graham, although this was a while ago, was advising me that there's a little... I'll read this verbatim. There's a little bit of sound leakage, like maybe the volume is too high on your headphones. You prick. It's nice getting into the mood, isn't he? He says he can't stay long because he's having his tea and catching up on MasterChef.
Well, you haven't had tea.
That's what he said, Graham. You're making yourself sound like a right cunt when you say all this to us tonight. Yeah.
And Graham is also telling us that Tom Baker once gave an interview in which he described Sam Neill as magnificently boring.
Oh, that's not very nice.
Guess who's just posted a comment? And then we'll
leave. Is it very chance?
Is it George?
For a while.
George.
Well, it could be. All I'm going to say is the Black Priest was the Doctor in Fawlty Towers, Louis Mahoney.
We know
also
that.
Old Billy in Doctor Who, Blink and in Planet of Evil. And the Irish old guy is Tommy Duggan, who was the Thorn funeral priest in the first film at the end. And Father Paul Cleary, who refuses Mrs. Dawes diagonal sandwiches at Father Jack's funeral, and Father Ted. And the diner owner in Superman 2 and the American ambassador in Doctor Who and the Mind of Evil, Craig.
Thanks to George and IMDb trivia for all.
Yeah, thanks, mate.
Okay, so we will dive back into the information exchange. It's clearly going to be a busy night on the information exchange tonight, Chris.
Fuck you. Are you in Dictionary Corner?
It was good, wasn't it?
It was good. I was quite impressed by it. Yeah.
So now we're getting some of the exposition from books of the Bible that don't exist, or exist in probably the same sense as the rest of the books of the Bible, and that somebody's just made them up.
Absolutely.
So, the Angel Isle, that means England.
This guy looks a bit like Mr. Tyrell from Blade Runner, with those spooky glasses.
Mm. Should be flapping his fingers on him going, how many?
That's a pair of glasses.
Now, this is the thing we said last week.
He does have great
what's
glasses.
Great is the idea that, actually, even now, anybody gives a fuck that they would be made ambassador to Britain.
Mm. Oh! Rover SDI.
Right, nice.
Rover SDI.
Mm.
Sounds like a sexually transmitted disease.
Oh, you fuck
you. Oh, thank you very much for that. I'm going to make that comment even worse by then saying, thank you.
So here's the ambassador.
Just
for a wee walk.
Fighting crime, talking about.
Just fighting evil and crime on his own. A wee sick of the pipe. Okay. Here comes one of those dogs with a corg.
That wouldn't happen.
Bang. No, that wouldn't happen now.
Ambassador going for a walk?
Mm.
No.
Why would the ambassador not go for a walk?
Because they're crazy with the security.
Mad for the security.
I'm slightly worried where Ron Logan's got to with the sausage casserole, I have to say.
But I imagine, I would say the first idea is that you brown
the
sausages.
Camera around it. Oh no, I wouldn't brown
sausage
for a casserole.
Why
would
I would,
not?
Yeah.
I would.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't. Why not?
Well, I'd brown them, then remove them.
No.
Boil them?
Yeah, boil them and get the fat out of them.
Oh,
that's like these sausages.
You boil them just enough to get all the fat out of them, so your casserole isn't swimming in fat.
That's nonsense. No. seal them in the pan. And take it. I would actually use maybe a Le Creuset pan, sort of a casserole. Then take them out, and then use the bits in the bottom with a little bit of, you know, to make essentially a sort of thick gravy at the bottom, and get them back in with the vegetables and whatnot. Cook them off, get them in, put the lid on, a little bit of fluid, some sort, not some sort, and just leave it there for maybe, I don't know, an hour.
Nah.
Back at the information
exchange. Wouldn't thank you for that.
What would you serve it with, though?
Ah, Ron Logan, he's browned them in the oven.
What do you mean? What would you serve them with? Yeah, what would you serve the casserole with?
Well, maybe mashed potatoes.
Ron Logan has browned them in the oven. Chris?
In the oven?
Yeah.
That's almost splitting the difference. I think we can both agree we're not very happy about that.
And William D. Briggs says, I wish I could type that fast, George.
Hey!
Very quiet in Ringgrosvenor Square that morning.
So what's happened between Omen 2 and Omen 3?
I don't know. You've just been we haven't got a chance to tell you what's happening in this
Ron's
show.
Ron's got underway with the fucking casserole. Well, what's his name's grown up? Damien has grown up. Now, we have to look out here for Ruby Wax.
You see her there with the white hat on. You don't have to look out for her. She has speaking lines. You'll see her very obviously in a minute.
All right. I was suggesting she was fucking hiding.
Oh, shut the fuck up. I'm just saying.
Oh, you said shut the fuck up. It's five minutes in.
Oh, shut the fuck up.
Bah, fuck off, you twat. She looks like Maggie Moon, doesn't she?
I liked Maggie Moon. Mm. Was she on that tune, wasn't she?
Boats and Trains.
But what else was she on?
She was also in that famous catastrophic Hogmanay programme.
Live at Gleneagles.
Oh, so she was. Was she the one who the guy was crawling on the floor?
I was totally trying to feel her arse up and everything while she was singing.
This is the scariest shot in the film.
But did Maggie Moon...
Well, that bit with the tattoos.
Shut up!
I want to know if
Wait till we actually talk about something to do with the film.
Fuck the film. Did Maggie Moon have an existence outside of Name That Tune?
Shut up! See that? Look, I mean, it's just one shot of a reverse shot in the mirror. I think it's really creepy.
Yeah, because I think you think something's going to happen, don't
you? Yeah, but I think it draws you quite closely into it.
Okay.
Anyway, back at Maggie Moon.
Can we talk about Maggie Moon now?
Yeah.
For sake, man.
So did she have an existence outside of being on Name That Tune and possibly Celebrity Squares?
Yeah, she used to.
You said she was on the Hogmanay programme.
She was in Live in 85. She was used to appear quite regularly on the Benny Hill show.
Did she?
Yep.
What about Rosemary?
She was quite a good looking lady, as I remember, Maggie Moon.
Maggie Moon, yeah.
Rosemary, I think, just existed on Punchlines, didn't she? Do you remember?
Rosemary!
Remember?
No, that's...
That's what was more in depth. She was more like this. I'm Rosemary. Hey,
that's quite good,
I'm Rosemary.
There's a bomb under that table.
Yes,
there's Ian Paisley with a bike over his head saying, "I'm holding a rally."
There's a bomb underneath Willie Rushton. Hey, that's what she was saying. That's very good, wasn't he, on Punchlines?
I love Willie Rushton. Willie Rushton was great. I think he did. He's just got a porno mag out. Look,
he's got an awful lot of trouble to make sure.
Here we go.
That somebody else is responsible for a shooting and that they all see him at once.
Well, bad.
William D. Briggs was on Maggie Moon's website the other day.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Weird. I'll warrant he was.
MaggieMoon.co.uk.
Was that the dark web, William?
Yeah, I would think so. Well, and she was on Shooting Stars, Patrick Rosemary.
She was indeed.
Wow,
speaking of which,
very funny. Here come the press corps.
There must be someone we know and love in there.
Hmm, yeah.
I like Ruby Wax. Ruby Wax is great.
Oh, yeah. Yes, so there is Ruby Wax.
Pretty much the only broadcaster ever to say to O.G. Simpson, "You're a murdering gun, aren't you?"
Yeah, she pretty much, isn't she? So what's going on?
Well, this, look.
Oh, no, because you kept on talking about Maggie Moon.
He just shot his...
That's quite good, that, isn't
it? Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah.
I think they would be more shocked than that, though.
Mm. I like his leg
thrashing about.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Oh, no.
That's quite good.
You'll never get the blood out of
that. that was the Police Academy music, wasn't it? No, it was Stripes, wasn't it? I don't know.
Ian Hepburn.
I'll tell you what it was. It was at National Lifeman's Animal House.
Oh.
Hi, Ian.
Oh, look at this. This is honestly, I'm so pleased we mentioned Rosemary. William D. Briggs served Rosemary when he was a waiter at Wimbledon Greyhound Stadium. Guess how much of a tip she gave him?
How much?
£5.
That's not bad.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
that's pretty good, isn't it?
She was always known for her big tips.
Hey. She's got her knockers as clear rockers.
Chris, can we open these chocolates?
No, they're all
great.
Now, this guy.
Oh, yeah.
John Mason, I think his name is.
The MSP.
Used to crop up every now and again. The thing I remember him now from is, do you remember when BBC Two used to have their late night comedy slot? And there was like Seinfeld.
Yeah.
And then if you're lucky, they would move on to like Bilko. Oh, yeah. Phil
are you being disobliging about Seinfeld?
What?
He said if you were lucky.
It moved on to Bilko.
All right, so you
when
just
it ran out, okay. If you were lucky.
But you're okay about Seinfeld?
Yeah. I've never
seen it. To get belligerent, I'm just
I've
asking.
I've never watched a single episode of Seinfeld, actually.
Well, and then there was another... but then there was this one... Then they would move into really... there was like Grace Under Fire, which was like... Eh. And then there was one called Night and Day, which was about two... like elderly, they had been radio hosts or something, and they were starting up again. And it was him and Jack Warden, and they were called Night and Day, and it was fucking terrible.
Was it? That's a shame.
So, what is going on in this film, Craig?
Well, what's going on is
just fill us in on the backstory.
The man that's played by Sam Neill, totally boring, is the devil. He's Damien. So he's the Damien. Devil's son.
Okay,
he's all grown up now.
Not picked that up yet.
He is the president of Thorn Industries, so he's a very wealthy man, and he's just been offered the ambassadorship to the court of St. James, which means to these sceptred isles, God bless Her Majesty.
Oh, so we're going to get some more stuff in Britain?
Oh, yeah, it's all in Britain, yeah. Yeah, yeah. He's just gone over to America to be given the job. Uh-huh. But he's saying, I'll only do it for 2 years, right?
Right. Uh-huh.
Because after that, I'm going to need a wee rest.
So we better no. Armageddon.
He's just saying, I'll do it for 2 years, right? Because then I just want to like join the Senate, Ken.
So he's from Cowden Beath,
isn't it? It's from Edinburgh, isn't it? He's like, I'll only date for a couple of years.
That's a bit more Heartland Fife-y.
No. If it was Heartland Fife, I'd say A. But this is the trouble with Edinburgh. People now say A instead of saying Ken, which is what they should say, when it was a proper city.
They should say Ken.
Before it was taken over by cunts and tweed jackets and purple trousers.
So has he done... Stop talking about me like that.
Hello, Edinburgh!
Yeah. Has he... So has Damien, between Omen 2 and 3, has he done, like... bad things.
We don't know.
Well, we've no idea.
Oh, but do they allude to it?
He's going to do some bumming later on, like, so they've got to presume that he's been up to no good.
Through some means.
Well, no, I think you're concentrating too much on the years between.
I am.
Yeah.
As opposed to the actual years on the telly.
Which is really all we're really qualified to talk about.
All right, fair enough.
So he's now just saying, well, that's it.
No, but this is things where he says, I'll only take the job, but I want the presidency of the Youth Council.
Yeah.
It was also a strange thing, looking back now, that anybody would care about the UN in any capacity.
Yeah, was that a thing then, the UN Youth Council?
I'm not entirely sure, but I think he's, you know, it's all about corrupting the youth and all that sort of thing.
Well, I don't know about that.
Meanwhile, cut to George O'Bank.
Oh, okay.
It's funny, this is the first one of the three that gets quite religious, and it could be actually seen as being quite a Christian film in a way.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah, I can see that, yeah.
Back at the information exchange, there's shit going down. I think MasterChef Professionals is starting soon because Graham says he's going to be away soon. He wishes us all an awfully good Christmas.
You too, Graham.
Thank you.
If you're happier to spend the evening with Michelle Roux, that's fine.
Who doesn't... Is it? No, it's not. It's Little Nick Sauce who doesn't give any
It's Michelle Roux, Michelle Roux Jr.
Is he the one who doesn't give his staff any tips?
He takes the service charge as revenue. Yeah, he doesn't
little
pass
Nick
it
sauce,
on.
Yeah.
Sorry?
What?
We call him Little Nick Sauce in our house, sorry.
Yeah, we're not in your house. I don't know if you noticed
little
that.
What?
Little mixed sauce.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm
Little mixed sauce, Michelle Roux, mixed sauce.
Right. It's an anglicised. The joke is within the anglicisation of the
name. Mr. Rumbold.
Yeah.
What's he doing there? Sergeant Cryer from the Bill.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic.
Hmm.
Yeah, what have you drawn on this?
How interesting. I have a genuine question here.
Go on.
Of the information exchange.
I'm going to eat all these chocolates unless we're careful.
That's fine.
Well, you can pass around.
So this is a question for you two gentlemen.
Uh-huh.
Why do you hate Mark Kermode? And that's a genuine question.
Who's that from?
That's from Graham. So why do you hate Mark Kermode?
Top shit.
Okay.
So let's start with you, Craig.
I used to listen to his show and quite enjoy it. However, I think he's become a bit of a parody of himself.
Mm-hmm.
I think his insistence that The Exorcist is the best film ever made, it's nonsense.
Yeah, it's not just nonsense. It's nonsensical.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
I think his willingness to suck up the bum of anyone that he previously admires and thus say their film. For instance, he was a defender of Prometheus when it came out. Oh, I mean, it's probably a terrible film.
Yeah, good film. Carry on.
We should do a commentary on that sometime. See if it's changed. Revisit it. Prometheus 2. But more than anything, the thing that really turned me against them.
Uh-huh.
And actually, I had a couple of his books in my house, and I gave them to a charity shop after this in Shawlands.
A good charity shop.
Yeah, I gave it to them. Actually, I gave it to the Oxfam bookshop in Victoria Road.
They're all playing to Richard Donner for more work.
The reason I did that he looks like James Cannon Elf there, doesn't he? is that when his last book came out, because he writes these shite books all the time.
He does, yeah.
He wrote a book and it came out and it got reviewed by Will Self in The Guardian, which in itself is unspeakable.
Yes, yeah.
But Will Self gave it a pretty sniffy review. Uh-huh. And Mark Kermode flew through a massive fucking hissy fit about this and kept tweeting stuff like, oh, well, Will Self says it's not good enough, but it's like number 5 in the charts. And I actually tweeted him and said, this is a bit unbecoming of a critic, which a few people seem to like. Uh-huh. And then he blocked me, I think. No, and then... And I just thought at that point, if you're a critic and you write and you complain because you got a bad review, you're basically a dick then.
Chris, why do you hate Mark Kermode?
I just think he talks shit.
So you don't agree with his opinions? Or?
Well, it would be impossible to disagree with all his opinions. Because, for example, he defends Mary Poppins as both a great film and a film that if people don't like proves that the people who don't like it are fannies.
Would you agree with
That's
that?
That's perfectly true.
Okay.
But... he's generally wrong about everything. Mm-hmm. And the reason I say the thing about The Exorcist being the best film of all time but being nonsensical is not just nonsense.
Yeah.
Because the opinion is nonsense. Because it's not the best film of all time. It's not even the best Exorcist film.
Mm-hmm.
Is that his insistence on its sort of technical mastery and all that sort of thing is also just bollocks.
Yeah. Mm.
And since Friedkin himself... the director will tell you that he was sort of fucking making it up as he went along,
mm-hmm.
and the bits that work are just happenstance and all these sort of things, although he's incredibly pompous as well.
That's true.
It's not the greatest film ever made, even in a technical sense. So it's one of those things where, you know, people just say, you know, like Peter Cook used to say he was perverse and contrary mm-hmm. for the out of badness.
Mm-hmm.
So he would say things like, you know, if people say they like the Beatles instead of the Stones, he said prefer the Stones instead of the Beatles. Yeah. If people like the Stones, he'd say he'd like some album track that they'd never done, that even the Stones thought was rotten, and that was the best thing they ever done. All of it just be to be mm-hmm. perverse. And that's basically what he's done. What he does.
Mm.
And he's made a living out of it, but it doesn't stop him being full of shit.
This is true. Yeah, absolutely. Go along with that.
This is a good and thorough answer, Mark Kermode. Thank you.
That's a pleasure. Yeah, thank you.
That was very thorough, wasn't it?
I was going to add something to it. Now, what was it again? You've seen it.
Was it?
No, it was something to do with what you're saying there. But I can come back to it if it occurs to me. But no, he's a dick. He's a very boring man as well. Very boring man.
You're a very boring man.
You're a very boring man, Mr. Kermode. You really are.
And that we do not forgive.
No.
Yes, absolutely.
I refuse to call you doctor because you're not really a proper doctor.
No, we comedy skits here.
You don't look after people.
So
with the pompous diplomats.
Jim Pryor.
So when was Omen 3? What is that we are commentating on? When was this made?
Is it?
1981.
Right. And so.
Really? Is it?
When they did
Omen 3? As far back as that. 35 years ago.
So was it Omen 3 kind of.
After Omen 2,
Was it already a done deal when they were making Omen 2?
I have no idea. They're asking me now to talk about what was the production slate. Well, I looked at Wikipedia. I didn't like go to the fucking archive of 20th Century Fox.
I bet Mark Kermode knows.
He knows fuck all. He knows jack shit.
I just said there that he's 31.
Yeah, so he's aged 20. He's aged 19 years in 3.
Right.
Which actually
would also mean he was born in 1949.
Yeah.
Which is mental as well.
It's like Still Game. You're not really supposed to think about the fact they never get older in Still Game. It's the same sort of thing, really. Just don't worry about it.
What do we think of Sam Neill then, as a Damien?
Oh, I like Sam Neill.
Oh, yeah, he's great.
Is he good in this?
I like Sam Neill and everything he's in.
Really?
Yeah.
I can't say. I always think of him. Was he in like Cain and Abel?
He was indeed. With Peter Strauss.
Yeah, that's what I always think.
After this, wasn't it? Yeah, about 84. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just think.
And Riley, Ace of Spies.
Yeah, of course,
he's in Riley, Ace of Spies.
Which I only watched because I knew he'd been in this, but then liked. I thought, oh, that's good. Good program.
Yeah, bro.
Yeah.
Was it Troy Kennedy Martin wrote that?
Yes, it was. Yeah. It's a little bit slow, but in a good 70s way. So
80s, but apart from that, it's good.
No, but it's good in a 70s way.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, in the 80s.
Just because.
So she's supposed to be
saying that because I got that wrong.
She's supposed to be the anchor, no, you would have called it that then, the presenter of some sort of major prime time news, BBC news, current affairs programme.
Yeah. Something like that. Probably LWT. No, probably
no, no, it's BBC. She says BBC. They don't call us the British Broadcasting Charity for nothing or something, she says.
Wow. Now, can I point out a major plot flaw, please?
Sure. I was trying to work out what programme it could possibly be the equivalent of.
So the major plot flaw is as follows. In the first two omens, we are
Witchcraft
told...
World.
Hang on, this is good stuff. Okay. We're told all seven daggers must kill Damien. Here it's only one. The novels Omen 4 and 5 claim that the reason is one can only kill the body of the Antichrist, but not the whole thing. Craig?
Actually, it's in the first film.
Who pointed that out?
That was George.
Leo McKern points out
who's
in the first film
quiet tonight?
That the first dagger extinguishes physical life, and the rest that has to radiate out and a sort of sign of the cross to get rid of spiritual life.
Okay.
You have no idea at the end of this film whether she actually just doesn't go right.
Yeah? Or maybe that's why he says, you have won nothing, Nazarene.
Maybe.
Because he's like, that's fine, but I'm going to...
I'll be back.
I'm going to immediately possess a sparrow. Fucking come right at you, mate. Then you'll know. Can I interest you in cappuccino radiance, Chris?
No.
I would paint that up to the Dado rail.
Up to the Regency Stripe.
Yeah.
Now, I was disappointed to learn that I have already done my Chockey impression.
Yeah.
But I'm just going to do it again anyway.
Go on, then.
Go on.
Okay. It's good, isn't it?
That's actually quite
great having you here.
It actually isn't bad though, is it?
It's a bit like, it's also a bit like, is it Idris Gold he's called?
It's a bit like Jack Hawkins as well.
In the Mothman Prophecies.
Indeed.
Remember that phones him up?
Huh?
That's a crazy ass movie.
That is a crazy
It's a good film though, I like
the
it.
The Mothman Prophecies.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have been in the town in which it's supposed to be set.
So where is it set?
It's Larry Martin.
Point Pleasant, West Virginia.
Oh, wow.
Larry Martin, ladies and gentlemen.
Love it.
Yeah, but I've been in Point Pleasant, West Virginia, home of the Mothman.
William D. Briggs would like to praise me on my impression there.
Well
Thank
done.
You.
Yeah, that's good.
It's good. It's good impression.
Now, here's the thing that doesn't...
And so Neil Pike. Sorry.
Hi, Neil. No, Neil's a friend of mine. Hi, Neil.
Hello, Neil.
Neil's a modern friend because I've never actually met him or indeed spoken to him, but he is a friend from Facebook and from before that, the old British horror film site that I don't go on anymore. Neil's a great guy. Hello, Neil. It's good to hear from you.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Any questions, mate? You throw them at us.
Yeah, come on. Throw us some questions, particularly if you have some information on Craig's past.
I don't think he does.
Well, we'll find out. I mean,
I can't work out what I'm going to eat out of the chocolates here. Should I go for an orange one? Rich orange sounds quite nice, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So what's happening now in Omen 3? Is Omen 3 a good film?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Chris?
Yeah. It's Peter Sutcliffe. Just about to drive up this Oliver Stone. Just about to drive up the road.
And so what is it? Is it the consistency of the producer, do you think, that's ensured that... Because generally speaking, the story of trilogies is they usually quite get a bit shit, don't they?
I think most people would probably claim this is the weakest of the three, but I like it. I don't care what the real says.
It probably is the weakest of the three. But,
but still in itself, quite a decent film, is I think what we're saying.
It can be the weakest of three films and be shit or good.
Uh-huh. It's probably
the other two are like.
Yeah, it's probably relatively speaking, one of the smaller budget of the three. I don't think it has quite the scope of the other two.
No, but that's probably true.
It's one of the. I think Neil can come in on this because he sent me a message the other day that said it was at the top. It was the fifth most successful horror film in the '80s or something.
Really?
Well,
that's
yeah,
a
it's
nice kitchen. Cost five
See,
million,
I like that
got over 20 back.
Uh-huh.
It's quite French looking that kitchen, I would say.
I think.
It looks like the one in Top Secret.
Mm. I've got a lot
in which case, you know who he would be? Chocolat mousse.
I've got a lot of kitchens like that in sort of community halls and things over the years.
Aye. It's that sort of press in the back there that's nice, isn't it?
And the wee boiler over the sink.
You know how that would smell inside?
Mm.
How would it smell?
Like sort of slightly fusty, stale spices.
Exactly,
carbolic salt.
And a touch of tea.
Mm.
I think it might smell a little bit like a developing sausage casserole. On which note, Ron Logan is saying, thanks for the wish sauce and dab of curry tip.
Good, yeah.
He would have thanked Sully, but he was cutting the onions.
If you were going for a woodier taste, you'd maybe put a bit of thyme in there or something.
It's too late now.
It's just
in the oven.
No, I think he's fine where he is.
Okay.
That's going to... Look, he looks like Gordon Brown there, look.
Oh.
I think it's the black heel. Oh.
And Neil Pike... said that the budget for this film was $5 million.
Yeah.
It took $25 million gross.
Yeah, that's good, isn't
good.
It? Yeah,
that's the fifth best grossing horror film in 1981.
Oh, that's
now, there's
a
quite
sucker.
A lot of qualifications in there because that's the best grossing horror film.
Well, it depends what the other horror films were in 1981.
So what was the best grossing... What would you think would be the best grossing horror film in 1981? Come on, Craig. proper horror fan.
I'm thinking 1981. Mm-hmm. It could have been something like...
So you just listened to Ain't No Pleasing You by Chaz and Dave, and you're heading off to the cinema. What are you going to see?
I think that was 82, actually.
Our television centre, folks, you can tell.
I think Ain't No Pleasing You was a hit in 1982, mate.
No, it's 1981. Anyway, move on.
Okay.
So, you're off to the cinema. You're going to stop in at the Wimpy on the way.
I think 1981 you might have been going to see The Burning, which is the film that, of course... Ooh. Was banned for a while and kick-started the careers of the Weinstein brothers. It was the first Miramax film. Mm-hmm. Horror films that in 1981.
Are you getting on the phone there to have a wee look?
No, I'm going to see what year There Ain't No Pleasing You was a hit, because I think it was 1981. I'm trying to think what else came out that year. Well, come on, help us out, Neil. I think that's the year that Excalibur came out, but that's not a horror film.
No. Some. Would I be wrong in thinking that no one here has ever read any of the sequels to this instalment?
Ever read any of the sequels?
This is what Becca Still... Hello, Becca, is asking.
No. I've never read any of these.
Well, so earlier on, there was an allusion there, wasn't there, to Omen 4 and 5 as books. Is that right?
Yes. Right. So, some news just in at the Alternative... Uh-huh. Information Exchange, which is set up as an alternative to your mainstream media.
Yeah. Well, like this.
Ain't No Pleasing You is a song by Chaz and Dave from the album Mustn't Grumble, which was released as a single on the 7th of March, 1982.
Oh. Mm. I feel chastened about that.
Well, you should do.
So there was an Omen 4 TV movie there, wasn't there?
Well, was it a TV movie? I know it was an Omen film movie, but it might have only shown on the TV.
William Briggs.
We talked about that last week.
William Briggs is chipping in that he still would like us to likely add commentary.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Right, so Neil Pike. This is good. Right, are we ready for this? You should have got some of these.
Oh, yeah, I'm seeing them now.
So, Chris, American Werewolf?
Yeah. Was that number one? Or was it The Howling?
I think these are probably in that order.
Okay.
We've got Friday the 13th, Part 2.
Mm-hmm.
Halloween 2.
Mm-hmm.
And Ghost Story.
Oh, right. Ghost Story, I really quite... Ghost Story is an extraordinary novel.
Is it?
And an okay film. It does have, what's her name, the Borg woman with her jubblies out.
Alice Creek? Is that the
Borg woman? Okay. And it also has... it's got an amazing cast. All the old guys of the Chowder Society are Fred Astaire, Douglas Fairbanks Jr., somebody else, and John Houseman.
Oh, okay.
John Houseman telling ghost stories.
This is horrible.
This is a lovely...
Oh, this is a pretty nasty death, isn't it?
TV set here, isn't it? What's that programme meant to be?
It's called The World in Focus, I think.
Wow.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah, it's horrible.
Which one was it died there?
It's a sort of younger one.
Aye.
Younger, beefier one.
Do we want to pass any judgment on Rogue One, by the way?
Yeah.
It was great.
Terrific.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I gave it 7.5 out of 10.
An awful lot.
Which I think that's a decent score.
It's a decent score.
That is a decent score, isn't it?
I felt you were a wee bit grudging, a little bit, oh, I'm going to reserve something back because I'm a bit cool and I wear purple trousers. But Chris had joy splattered all over his face.
Do you know when I put that score in, I didn't realise it was that transparent.
Yeah, well. Was that Chris?
That's right. I've seen an awful lot of people in this studio.
Yeah. It's not the modern BBC, that's for sure. Mm. Not that I would know.
Ah, now he's spotted what the plan is. He's found the dagger.
You sneaky bastard.
So I hesitate to ask a production question, but I'm going to anyway. Any reason why they filmed a lot of this back in the UK then?
I have no idea. Maybe there was a nice Granada. Is that a Granada or is that a BMW? I think it's a BMW, actually. I have no idea, mate. That's a very shiny door, isn't it?
Would it interest you to know that the Omen books were actually about Damien's son? Oh, interesting. I didn't know that.
Funnily enough.
What?
I was going to say, I have never read The Omen. And I started to look the other day to see if I could find a copy, but I'll have to go and buy a sort of old second-hand copy from somewhere because you couldn't. I was going to maybe put it on my Kindle for a read.
Uh-huh.
But I couldn't find it. It's out of print.
So what's going on in the film now then, Craig?
What's happening is he's just worked out that someone's after him with the daggers. Uh-huh. And this wee guy's going to send off to create the next cyborg.
Ah, a reference to Buggenhagen. Now, is this the bit where they mentioned that he was ill or something? Which we were talking about last week, which we all decided was quite superfluous.
You what?
We said last week that isn't there a reference saying that Buggenhagen was actually dying anyway when he went on his little quest? No?
Don't know about that.
We did talk about that.
So he's worked out that they've been dug out of the old Thorne Museum, which is only presumably probably just stopped smouldering after 2 years. Quite how they got. That's the Nazi guy from The Exorcist.
Ah, don't call me a Nazi! You probably never went bowling with Goebbels either, you bastard.
Chris, I think it's come to that
time. It's a nice room, that, isn't it?
That time of the night.
Oh, do you think it's time to open a window? On the Cream Guy Films Advent calendar.
Calendar, let's open that up now. Ah, okay, so. I think you can start us off on this. You ready?
Yeah.
It's Christmas subject. Nuclear Armageddon.
Good thing, bad thing?
Well, what's your recollections of Nuclear Armageddon as
I never lived through it.
As a thing.
Well, I was obviously a bit scared of it, you know.
Are you as scared of Nuclear Armageddon as a possibility now as you were perhaps back in the day?
Well, yeah, if anyone, any sensible person should be, because you ought to read Eric Schlossler's book,
Command and Control. Kitchen. Yeah, I have read that.
Back Kitchen wouldn't have Fairy. It would have Morning Fish. Sorry.
It's a very good book, that. Mm-hmm. You should read that book. I might get you a copy of that.
Command Control, yeah, it's very good. You're talking about
it. Yeah, it's a terrific book, yeah. Yeah, and it's quite terrifying that it hasn't happened, really, to be honest with you.
But why do people don't talk about it as much as they used to back in the day?
No, because people are too busy buying shit.
People are too busy buying shit.
Yeah, back when it was a proper country, people were frightened of stuff like that. No, they're not, because they're fucking idiots. Because the world is full of fucking idiots. Yeah. That's why.
But I remember when I was a nipper at primary school, we used to talk about nuclear Armageddon quite a lot.
Well, that's because it was always on the telly.
Yeah, every 5 minutes.
And you had civil defence stuff coming through the door every couple of months.
It was a very realistic thing to be scared about.
And you used to get war games, didn't you, in local councils? They used to do quite a lot of simulations, and they used to argue over who was going to kill who.
Whom?
Between whom, thank you.
Sorry.
Local councils in England.
I would say...
The councils in England decided who amongst them they were going to kill.
So what would happen was...
You think it's tough these days on austerity?
They would have these recreations, and it would essentially be one council against another. Would have these fictional Armageddon battles.
There was the famous North Rutlandshire, South Cambridgeshire wipeout of 1984. Here you go. So this is where we actually find out.
Chris, any views on nuclear Armageddon?
Okay, I'll just sort it.
Before we move on.
Oh, you just want to... I've been getting that one, eh? Just what we've said. What was that I was watching the other night? Oh, on YouTube somewhere, there's that series, The Cold War.
Very good series.
Very good series. Although, not bad on the music. It's
an
odd misstep by Carol Davis.
Mm-hmm.
But
is it like this?
Bow! No,
I want to do polkas in this.
It's Carol Davis married to?
He's married to, what's her name? You are, she is a tat!
Oh, is that
Paul Holden?
Gene Boat, that's right. Yeah.
No, anyway, the point is there was it made
it off this again.
It made a reference to the war games, the BBC drama.
Oh yeah.
Peter Watkins drama and how it was banned and all that sort of thing.
Wow.
So anyway, I suppose the point is there was stuff like that getting made at Threads. The morning after.
Yeah. Well, we're talking about doing some of these at some point, but I think we all agreed that Threads just too upsetting.
It's just too upsetting to watch.
Yeah.
And actually, so is the morning after. It's pretty grim.
Well, you got upset because your beloved Steve Guttenberg comes off badly.
Sir Steve Guttenberg, yeah.
Yeah, who you love.
There's also one... Is it the remake of Feel Safe that has Powers Booth? As the pilot? No, it's Harvey Keitel. So there's another one with Powers Booth.
I like Powers Booth.
Yeah, who plays like a bomber pilot. And it's the sort of same thing where...
Bomber's got the whip hand now.
Bomber
don't like them Jews. orders come out. And he's the captain of the plane,
B-52.
And it's like his co-pilot is a woman who's also having an affair with, and she refuses to carry out the orders, and it's like, you'll just have to shoot me and all that sort of thing.
Right.
So it's that sort of
I don't like Moscow very much. Got to drop a nice big bomb on it.
We're going to fly to the Caribbean. Anyway, the reason people don't talk about it just now, I suppose, is because back then it was just part of everyday currency.
It was part of everyday currency. So Neil Pike is saying that...
Yeah, well done.
There is, in fact... a book on the UK war games that was written by Duncan Campbell. And George White says,
exciting, is it? A lot of
George
laughs.
White says, in Rogue One, did you spot Mike Yates, Richard Franklin, who apparently is in it?
What?
No, who, I don't know who either of those people are.
So Richard Franklin is the actor who played Mike Yates in Doctor Who in the UK.
Oh, right, no.
Apparently he was in the
Who film. Was Mike Yates? I'm not being a proper fan.
No, so there was the Brigadier,
yeah.
And then there was Sergeant Benton.
Oh, yeah.
And then the other guy was Mike Yates.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yates. Amazingly, no, he didn't jump out at me.
Wow. No,
I did see Michael Smiley, though, but I didn't realise it was him until afterwards. Do you know who Michael Smiley played in it? You know, the guy with the funny nose that bumps into it, that's the guy from Star Wars that gets killed.
Oh, right.
That was Michael Smiley playing Carol's
dad.
Yeah.
Oh, sad Jesus.
I don't think you'd get to do this now. We talked about this before. There's a lot of really quite...
here comes the Great Conjunction comes.
Oh, here it comes.
The Great Conjunction.
And what's the other rule about conjunctions, Chris?
Oh, you should never have a conjunction after a comma.
Whereas I prefer the Oxford comma.
Yeah, that's weird.
I don't think so.
What's an Oxford comma?
It's putting a final comma in between the last thing and the rest of the sentence.
Oh, okay. You're not happy about that, Chris?
No. Well, no, I'm not. I'm not happy about it unless there's a conjunction.
Right, okay.
Because that's what it serves. That's the purpose it serves.
Right.
Now, there's never any explanation of why these scientists
are
so pally with the priests.
Yeah. And why one of the priests is quite clearly a paedophile. Now, Britain isn't that size, by the way. Look at it compared to Denmark. Well, the south of England isn't that size, that's for sure. This is great, watch this. Right, so these guys are coming up here.
Here we go.
And what's happening?
That's a nicely framed shot, isn't
it? That's Captain Pete, that's Father Paedophile in the background.
Boom!
Talking of which...
Right in there, bosh.
Craig.
Space.
Apparently the
satanic space spunk is coming your way.
The Omen book apparently reveals that Troughton was a paedophile priest in Africa whose victims was forced to eat his own balls. And David Warner washed himself in urine.
What?
It's a comment from George White.
George, that didn't happen in the book, George. You've made that up, son.
Yeah. Almond Jewel?
Well, I think I'll have an African bowl. Thank you very much. That's a nice bed, mind you. There's Bob Cryer again.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, we're at T-500.
That old boy playing the sort of Bernard Lovell.
Well-kent face.
Well, he used to play scientists quite a lot.
Yeah.
One thing that sticks in my mind, for some reason, just popped into my head. Do you remember that series about forensic science from the sort of mid-80s? Yes. It was voiced by Ludovic Kennedy.
Yes, I do, yeah. I'm trying to think what it was called. It'll come back to me.
Well, it was a particular episode.
And it had a shattering glass in the time sequence. Which takes us back to the Sweeney again.
There was a particular episode.
Indelible Evidence.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, well done. Yeah. Yeah.
Ironically, it's called Indelible Evidence.
And you can remember it.
Yeah.
There was an episode that stuck in my mind, which was to do with an IRA shooting. And
those were the days.
Somebody turns up, shoots somebody, and it was the wrong target and all this sort of thing. And they find it because the guy who had done the shooting before had bitten into an apple and thrown it away.
Oh, yeah.
Really? And then it was a particularly weird... bite mark and other sort of thing. Anyway, they have to make reference to this top dental forensic expert in London, and it was played by programme by him.
Well,
was it? Wow.
Now, there's a Granada limousine.
That's a Granada limousine. Yeah. Although I would contend that every Granada was a limousine.
Much fancied at a family funeral around that time, though.
What a Granada limousine.
Mm. So the bite mark in Ireland that was unusual, was it because the person had quite nice teeth?
Well, now.
I'm not trying to...
But they don't have that car. Yeah.
So what's going on there?
It's Harry Secombe trying to push everybody back.
Yes, yeah. Paul Michael Glazer in a cowboy hat.
So what's happening?
Quite nicely shot, that, isn't it?
Yeah, it's nicely shot. Who's that chap? He's someone I recognise as well.
Are you?
Your man who just wandered off there on a nice fringe.
Don't know.
So what's happening now in this film?
Well, there's a sort
How
of internet...
How did she get in? So the press can get in, but she's the press, but she's in.
Because she's the BBC, and I know very little about the BBC except...
They get in anywhere.
Doors open. Her face is her passport.
Dressing room doors open.
Actually, I think you'll find later on that her arse is her passport, actually, in this film, famously.
her back door is kept out.
Yes, that took a bit of explaining when I watched this with my son.
Oh my goodness, man.
Don't worry about this bit, son. It's all right. Apparently in one of the book sequels, I'm sure George will take this because I was reading about this, in one of the book sequels, the son or daughter of Damien that turns up, she gives birth to rectally.
She shat it out.
Yeah. What?
Say that again.
She gives birth rectally to his spawn.
Wow. Is that a thing that can happen?
But you look really confused now. I don't think it can. Yeah. I've been in a situation once or twice where it felt like that's what was happening.
I've shat a baby. Right. So then you get the little hint there of why the plot's going to develop, because his psychic's wife has just given birth to their daughter on that night, on the night of the Great Conjunction.
Okay. We should say, because Fanny Boss here was getting in the way, the Great Conjunction was this sort of supernatural holy spunk that came down from the stars, and he churned, and in the words of the great Johnny Mathis, a child is born.
From someone's bum.
A ray of hope. Knickers and nair. It'd
be nothing to do with him.
This comes to pass. When a child is born.
What did we think of the CGI cushion?
I thought it was all right, actually. Yeah. They probably overused it a little bit.
And
I think Martin.
Mouth and the eyes, I don't think were
Conahan said to me today, amazingly, quite a good point. They could have done a little bit more with reflections and things just behind it. Well, but it was pretty good, I thought.
Were two things about it I was quite surprised by. One, when he appears, spoilers, and you see him in reflection.
Yeah.
I thought that's how you were going to see.
Yes, so did I.
The second part is, until they start using lines from the film, the original film, it doesn't sound right.
No, the voice isn't right. It
doesn't jar.
No.
But it doesn't sound right. How did they do the voice in? Is that just
the actor who plays... There's actually an actor there with a face stuck on it. It's this Guy Henry who's in lots of things. He does the voice at first, and then they use Cushing's voice. And they've obviously tried to sort of get
him
to do it.
I just noticed that was...
Well, that's a charabank.
I just noticed the glass he was drinking out of there was the tumbler, glass version of the tumbler.
Nice.
My tumbler, which I think is called something like a Solaris collection glass.
Nice.
Solaris collection?
Yeah, something like that's called a Solar or Solaris.
Were they released to commemorate the 1972 Soviet science fiction film.
And you could get them in the Argos catalogue.
Fantastic.
Could you?
Yeah.
Designed by Stanislav Lem.
Catalogue.
I wonder why...
That's not a bus stop.
So classy, says Neil Pike.
What?
Classy.
Classy.
Yeah.
In 1981, would the bus over the over to Moors have looked like that?
It's quite a sort of
heritage trail in Catherine country.
Except, yeah, isn't it? That's my point about things not being all of the year in which they're made.
Yeah, but not that fucking
That was Corbyn's Britain, mate.
Yeah, but it would have been, I think a bus around that time, which you're right, would have been a wee bit older, would have been like the bus they have in... that they escape in the Porridge movie in. You know, one of those big old Vauxhall coach kind of buses.
Okay.
That's like a bus from the 50s.
Yeah, but I still think you'd get it in remote places. You'd get it in remote places, mate. But also, as I always point out, when you know, see Thatcher in 79 coming into power, it's an old sort of early 70s Rover bringing it in. And stuff
I think you're fine.
Is it an Austin?
That's a Rover P5000.
Yeah.
They were standard limousines right up until the mid-80s.
Were they?
No.
What were they replaced by?
Yep.
No.
Replaced by Jaguars.
Jaguars.
Yeah.
Apparently...
There was a pool of cars, of those cars. They had armoured windows and things. Yeah. And they'd been around. They were replaced and all that, but they'd been around since the late 50s, I think.
Oh, yeah, there's the point, yeah.
But they were... Some of the ones that you'd have seen were new.
But you know, that's nice, isn't it? It's a nice shot.
Yeah, it's a lovely
shot. Which actually
nice
looks
painting.
A bit like...
It's a painting.
It is. Yeah. But it looks like the Abbey from The Name of the Rose, which was also written by Andrew Borkin.
It's on the model.
Apparently, one of the women on the bus...
That dwarf's, grown up from... Don't Look Now, isn't it?
Apparently, one of the women on the bus is Hazel Court from The Curse of Frankenstein, who was married to Don Taylor, director of Damien Omen 2 and star of Stalag 17.
Which just happened to be on that bus.
Who says that? George.
She was on her way to...
Can I just point out one thing about that, though?
Yeah,
he wasn't the star of Stalag 17.
No. Was he not?
No. William Holden, was the star of Stalag 17. Okay. Right up, you Georgie boy!
See, this is classic.
The Georgie Porgie!
So what's happening here? What are they doing? What's going on?
They're luring,
he's walked into a gangster movie.
Luring Damien.
Take that, you son of a bitch!
Well, there is a bit of a weird thing going on here that I'm never entirely happy with.
Okay.
So they lure him to this old monastery so that they can capture him and stab him to death.
Yeah.
But actually, I'm never entirely clear why he goes, why they go there, and why he follows them.
Because when this happens, dan dan dan,
they killed the old boy.
They've killed Frank Finlay's stunt double. The boy on the right's got a wee bit of a gangster thing going, isn't it?
That's quite. Hey. Is that a studio, perchance?
Yeah. He's got knives.
This is quite. I remember this sequence being quite spooky.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, it finishes up very creepy.
Down there, is that the only way out?
Well, it's not really a way out.
Yeah, it's just a dog.
You've got stabby knives. Stab the dog.
Stab the dog. Fuck
stabby
it up.
Knives.
Fuck that shit up.
Let's wait down here. Nothing could possibly go wrong. You should have checked that before you got in, you couple of daft bastards.
Oh. There you go. Oh,
there you go.
That's your dog.
None shall pass.
None shall pass.
There you go.
So.
That's quite a storm, that, eh? No rain yet.
This is quite horrible as well. Yeah, that's him stuck.
Yes, it's a national trust. It is a national place. It's a national trust place. There will be one in the morning. Hope not.
In Mike Mirafushi's view, it needs a wah-wah comedy sting when they stab the wrong guy.
Yeah.
That's good. Twiddling with
twiddling
acting.
That guy's really good in this actually, because he becomes quite central to the plot in a little while.
Uh-huh.
Is that the same house from the first film?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
that makes me wonder: is it supposed to be his house, or the house that comes with being ambassador?
No, I think it's his house,
right?
Which of course was Gregory Peck's house.
Yeah, and which of course was
Barbara Hutton's house.
Yeah,
but I think the suggestion is that it becomes, you know, he just stays there.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's the ambassador in this big fuck-off house.
Yeah, absolutely. No. With his big bum palace on the top.
Big dark bum palace.
Double-fronted bum palace.
So this is him, like, kill the Wains.
Yeah, liquidate the Nazarene.
Kill the Wains. Call a meeting.
That was an album, wasn't it? Liquidate the Nazarene.
Yes, Chris.
Shall we open another window?
Look at the fully leaved trees there, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, wait till you get to the hunt.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely.
It's middle of bloody winter.
Yeah,
it looks absolutely freezing as well.
It's Baltic, Let's open another window.
So between then and Sunday,
it gets right cold.
Look at that.
Okay, let's open that window. It's BSB and early satellite television.
I don't know anything about that.
So when was the first time you
watched? I love the way you say that, like, obviously I'd have nothing to do with that.
No, I just don't know.
Because I was living in the council estate with my fucking video.
What was your first experience?
The only person that had a video apart from you was Bob Monkhouse in 1983.
81, actually.
Whatever.
My first experience of satellite telly was when I bought the house I'm in now 15 years ago.
No.
And
way.
I got to put it in there. Really? I never had it
before. So you always cancelled telly before that?
Yeah.
See, I never had the my first run in with that was on digital.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, I had that.
That must have been about
90s.
Yeah, I got it about 15 years ago. Yeah,
yeah. And I think we had it for about 6 months before it disappeared.
Yeah, me too.
ITV Digital.
Yeah,
and you could go into a shop, buy the box,
that's
and sign
right,
up.
Yeah.
Was that when, I think it was £30.
Yeah,
was that not with the Satan Greasy talk about Division One as if it's important?
What?
That was part of what sunk ITV Digital, was that they spent a fortune on getting, I think it was still Division 1
football. Well, you're getting a wee bit ahead of yourself here.
Well, that was,
hang on.
Right.
Early days, you said.
Yeah.
Right.
So.
On digital.
Yeah.
Right. That, all that stuff is ITV Digital.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, you'd still have the on digital to get through first. And on digital was pretty good, I thought.
Yeah, it wasn't a bad package at all.
It was a revolution.
It was.
Didn't need a disc. A dish, if you say.
Yeah,
that's right. And, you plugged it into the telly, and
you could watch fucking whole series of Doctor Who on a Sunday morning. It was fucking brilliant.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah,
it was cracking stuff. And then it all went wrong, and it turned into ITV Digital.
We were early adopters in our house because
you were early adopters.
Early adopters, because my granny died in about 1986.
Uh-huh.
So it was left bit money, so we kept,
that was fortuitous.
Kept hold of this money until 1989. We bought a BSB Squareel.
Ah.
So we were early adopters. Now, one of the things that you were meant to be able to do with the BSB Squareel was send messages to your pals who also had
beers.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Never happened.
Well, who knew someone else?
So you didn't have pals.
BSB Square Ale.
Not only did you not have pals, but you didn't have anybody about Square Ale.
So there's all these messages that you sent out via your satellite.
Making their way to
Vega now.
So when some hipster puts up their Square Ale, they'll just get, "Hi, I've just had a really hard wank."
While watching Doctor Who.
There was a Square Ale on a roof around the corner from this house right up until about 18 months ago.
Superb. Good
effort. Apparently in certain bits...
That's well shot, isn't it?
Yeah, that's beautifully shot. In certain bits of Knightwood, you could get BSB on a terrestrial
aerial. Knightwood?
Knightwood, sorry. Yeah. Thanks to some dodgy dish at the Kirkton Flats.
There you go.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
But BSB was digital satellite.
Yes.
So there we are. Yeah. And it was a Galaxy
as opposed to
analog.
What do we have now?
Sky Wars. We have digital now. Right. But we've only had digital for about the last 15 years. Before that,
I get freaked out. I have a reasonable knowledge of science, but I get freaked out by how we can park a satellite 250,000 miles away in space or whatever the fuck it is.
Is that not covers... a slack orbit?
It is, but it just kind of freaks me out.
Mm. Now, ITV...
That it's out there. What if it goes wrong? Then we're all fucked. We won't have any telly.
What if it goes wrong?
Right.
Kill people or something.
No, but I worry about the lack of a fucking telly.
It's
going to take weeks to get up there and get
back to the black food transmitter.
The thing is, it's like a double whammy because not only have your loved ones died, but then there's nothing to watch.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Now, coming up is a little stunt by our very good, close friend, Mr. Vic Armstrong. Yeah, an authentic genius and an all round good egg.
ITV Digital is the one that spent all their money in the world on the championship.
Yes, I think it was by that point rebranded the championship, wasn't it?
They spent like £1 billion on.
Wasn't
it
that Greg Dyke? Or was that?
That was TVN. Right.
The early days of UK Gold was pretty amazing, and their original. In fact, I wonder if they did.
They were owned by the BBC, weren't they?
Those channels, Thames, UK Choice.
It was Thames and the BBC.
Yeah.
And BSB was part owned by Granada.
Oh yeah,
their back original, when this was
a proper country. Correct.
So the original UK Gold ident was a dog running around.
That's nice.
An animation of a dog with whistling. Yeah.
They used to get some great programmes on, like Dan Antopoulos doing that Strayed programme where he'd fuck about and do wee jokes and things.
Mm-hmm.
It was great. On one of those channels, yeah. You just get all these weird shit turning up in the morning, like 10 o'clock.
Yeah. UK Choice?
There was UK Living.
Uh-huh. UK Gold.
UK History.
Right, can we just pause for the Vic Armstrong's brilliant, which it actually says in his memoirs. He's one of them. What he says in his memoirs, this was the most frightening stunt he ever did.
Really?
Because of the length of the drop and the shallow depth of the water that he dropped into.
So what's he going to do here then?
He's going to fall over the side. Yeah. I rather like that bridge. Mm. It always makes me think of the one out at Dumbarton that they tell you that dogs jump over.
Mm.
You know, the one on the way up to the house. You know about that story. It's a great 48 story. There's a bridge north, just in the hills above Dumbarton, Overton, up towards Overton House that... dogs have got a habit of jumping over.
Oh, really?
And killing themselves.
Why would they do that?
That's the mystery. Right. There's one theory that is to do with someone locally had a mink farm. And they think maybe the smell of them drove them fucking potty.
Huh? Right. Mink's not an expression you hear enough of, I think, these days.
No.
You mean mink.
Minky.
So here we go. We're about to get the,
okay.
Yeah, the great death. So it's Father Pedo coming at them. Mm-hmm. Isn't
it? So this is just people going at him with knives, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, that's the whole film. Yeah.
Now watch, he says, you fool.
But the little horse.
As he's talking to the horse now.
Fuck the horse up.
Mm-hmm.
Real bad.
The horse is like, nay, I'm not having it.
Not having that.
Top Vic Armstrong stunt coming up.
Okay.
Get to fuck. Take that, you cunt.
Wow, that is a good fall, isn't it?
Mm. Jesus. That wouldn't be a nice thing to land in either.
Mm.
You just don't really get that degree of graphic detail in films.
No, they throw a pixelated man over
there. I prefer to say those dogs look raging.
They do.
Can I...
take them. That's quite good, actually, isn't it?
Can we race back to the information exchange just very quickly?
Yeah.
Sharon says, hiya!
Hiya, Sharon!
Hi, Sharon, you're late, Sharon.
It's awfully scary. Sharon, behind you!
It's quite scary.
So, of course, one of the more interesting things about the development of ITV Digital was the monkey craze.
Ah, yeah.
They were changing hands on eBay.
They were, weren't they?
The newly popular eBay for nearly £200.
That's right. Yeah.
It was crazy money. And a little bit later on, when it all went wrong for ITV Digital, or around the same time, the guy that owned, remember the guy that owned the gadget shop? Was Chris.
So?
He was a sort of celebrity entrepreneur.
Chris L.
At the time.
Was it Chris L?
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. It's Chris Gorman?
Chris Gorman, yeah, that sounds about right, yeah. Mm-hmm. He bought this, I think he was like bought the entire stock of the monkeys off them and then sold them in the gadget shop for a fiver a throw. Made a fortune off it, yeah.
Yeah.
I have one, I think, yeah, and you have one
I've
as well.
I've got one over there, and I bought that for 50 pence at a car boot sale.
Did you know?
Yeah.
Does it smell?
No, it's only a dummy.
Hey.
And then, was ITV Digital, did it just disappear, or did it become something else?
No, that was it. It was on digital, then it was ITV Digital. Oh, no, that was it. That was it. Then there was NTL.
This stuff's quite good.
NTL, yeah, that's right, NTL, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Then that
no, but then NTL older. Became Virgin. Yeah. So it does still exist. So there we are. So.
This stuff is all pretty good. This is the sort of...
Yeah.
I don't know where it's meant to be, but it looks great. It's like
it's
a sort
it's
of...
meant to be some secluded spot.
Yeah, like on the sort of Yorkshire coast or somewhere. Nowhere in the south, because they don't have scenery as interesting as that.
That is definitely true. Yeah, this is nicely shot, isn't it?
The guy who directed it, Graham Barker, I think his name was. He also directed Alien Nation.
Did he? Really?
Graham Baker. And Beowulf, starring Christoph Lambert.
Oh, no,
always
he's a good actor.
Always a Christoph sign of Lambert. Class.
Yeah, he's a good actor. I love him.
I love Highlander. Highlander's a great film.
Yeah, there should have been only one.
Get away, you slippery, you crazy big haggis.
See, look, he's not. I'm not even taking my jacket off. I'm not stopping.
Doesn't I am say, Connor McLeod of the Clan McLeod.
Isn't there a bit where he says, "Are you cruising for a piece of ass?" I'm sure he says that in Highlander at one point. And he was also in Subway as well. Do you remember that film?
Yeah,
he's got blonde.
That was a big film for students in the '80s. That's Subway, right. Wasn't it? Yeah, he's also Greystoke. I am Lord Greystoke from Scotland.
Yes, now, that old boy there with the hat on...
Yep, that's the boy.
...who becomes the government minister who explains away the deaths, is also in Fawlty Towers, George.
Absolutely, yeah.
Hey. Yeah, he's the couple... I thought it was the couple with the kid, but it's not, I remembered. It's the couple who are always getting their order wrong backwards and forwards. And his wife is played by that woman... Oh, shit, what's her name? She was in everything at the time. She's Bob Hoskins' estranged wife at the start of Mona Lisa.
Yeah. Yeah, I know
she
the
was
one
always
mean...
in the Q programmes and there's a lot of it about and all that. She's a great actress.
He's also the dad in... He's Richard Burton's dad in the greatest film of the 1970s or indeed any decade. The Medusa Touch.
This is the greatest film, is it?
Yeah, that's a great film. The Medusa Touch, one of my favourite films. We probably ought to do it sometime because...
I'm not sure we should sully it.
True, it's a genuinely great film. We should just watch it and enjoy it.
Wittering nonsense.
Yeah.
So, Craig...
She's a bit hot.
Craig, at this point...
Yes.
...would you be taking your sausage casserole out of the oven, do you think?
How far into the film are we?
Well, not that far in yet.
Well, you know, it's now, but, you know, I think sausage casserole doesn't take that long, does it?
I'd say an hour's probably all right.
Yeah.
Depends how thick you want it to be. You could do it on top of the stove as well, just to get it.
Oh, I see.
Evaporate it a little bit, and deepen those flavours. I'd be tasting it now. You don't want to go too long because then your sausages might fall apart.
Yeah, that's true.
You said mashed potato.
Yeah, I'd like a nice.
I'd like potato
and turnip mashed together.
A nice crusty bread.
Nice crusty bread.
A bit of turnip in a potato interests me. Yeah, I like that.
George White thinks this was filmed. Those scenes that we just saw were filmed in Cornwall.
Mm. Yeah,
whereas
that
Sharon says
fine.
Kathy Tyson.
No.
Kathy Tyson.
No, Sharon. No.
She famously plays the prostitute.
She's the prostitute, not his wife. That's not his wife.
Bill Oddie's daughter's in it as well. Kate Hardy.
Bloody.
Bill Oddie. Yeah. No, she was in Kate Hardy. Else quite recently, wasn't she?
She was actually quite a promising actor, but she kind of gave it up. I don't know why.
It's coming out in 15 minutes.
She was very pouty.
It's coming out in 15
minutes. Good. What are you having it with?
What are you serving this with, Ron?
Yeah, come on, Ron. Let us know.
What would you? We're hoping for mashed potatoes.
Mm.
Well, I think I'd like a crusty bread with it, But if you can mash potato, I like Chris's suggestion. Putting some turnip in there.
I'd like some crusty bread, but I'd want a vegetable with it as well. A separate vegetable. Mashed potato and turnip. Yeah,
how about also maybe a little pile of steamed cabbage?
No, that would be nice.
I love it.
I don't know.
White pepper and
I'd be giving it a bit of pepper and a lot of butter. Yeah. You just said white. I would put black on it quite happily.
I like white pepper on cabbage.
Racist.
Especially white cabbage. White pepper on white cabbage.
He's a bit of a white supremacist when it comes to his cabbage.
Don't want black pepper on an advisable racist comment cabbage.
Fair enough.
Now, just looking at that...
I bet you Lou graded a case like that.
There's a guy who I used to work with...
I'll lend it to you, £20,000 a day.
There was a chap I used to work
with... Get my tummy, Curtis.
A chap I used to work with called Kevin J. Horn, and he used to come into work with a very ostentatious briefcase... And he just had a banana in it.
Well, funnily enough, one of the previous hospitals I worked in, there had been a reporter who had a...
A reporter in the hospital? That's,
yeah.
How's that
work? Well, registrar, yeah. Okay. That's what I meant. And he had a briefcase, and they all laughed at him for having a briefcase. And one day he'd left it in the office, and they said, I bet you that the combination is 007. And they went over, and they put it in, and it opened, and he had his sandwiches in it.
And it was just a three-digit combination.
Each side 007. I don't know. I think I know who it was.
Are you right?
Is this like this is still in London?
Yeah.
I can. Right. Okay.
No, you don't. You don't know. Yeah. Who
you know who?
You know where I was going with that.
He's actually a good guy. Yeah. But you know.
George White back over the information exchange.
Hi, George.
Some more facts. Mm-hmm. Norman Bird and the wife is Stella Tanner. Bird was also the vicar who exorcises the house in the Haunted House episode of Rising Dead.
Oh, that's good. Now, fair play to you, Georgia boy.
Yeah, like that.
St. John's Hill, the royal borough of Kensington, by the looks of it.
Okay, here we go. The wife of Mona Lisa is Pauline Melville.
Oh, yep.
Who just looks like Stella Tanner.
Yeah.
There we are. Happy with that?
Nice darts in there.
Yeah, that's a nice. Why is your knowledge of cars so good?
Oh, when I was a kid, I really liked cars.
Did you?
Yeah. We never had any. I didn't have a car till.
You sure that's a Datsun? There's no rust on it.
Or a satellite dish.
No, we didn't have a car till I was about 11. And our first car was a Hellman M.
Oh. Mm. And what's creepy about this is what happens in a minute.
The best car ever there, mate.
Yeah, Volvo 240.
Greatest car, Volvo 240.
Yeah.
Boom.
And the creepiest thing is what happens next is it doesn't. Nobody saves it.
Why is no one doing anything?
This is creepy. It's quite sort of blackly funny, this, though. Watch.
Oh, dear.
So, in case you've not been following it, or if, like, Jack, you're famously a halfwit, uh-huh. He's decided to kill every... It's basically the obverse of Pontius... No, it's not Pontius Pilate. It's Herod in the Bible. He's cleansing the nation of all the children born, or London of children born on that night.
So I think this is quite...
Well, it's kind of, you know, from the satanic, it's the satanic side. Well, I suppose Herod's kind
of... It's the same thing.
It's the same thing, isn't it? Because he doesn't do it out of goodness.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. He's just basically drowned the baby.
That is quite horrific.
It's a series of... The sound effects are horrible.
Another one here, there's just a series of baby murders.
But can I just say, it's not as horrific as this. Ron Logan is having linguine with sausage casserole. And he prefaces that with, "You won't like this."
No,
I'm having linguine. What do we think about that?
Well, I tell you an even more bizarre thing.
Is this peachy
chicken? Do you remember?
Can we come back to that though?
Do you remember? No, it's not peachy chicken, but I will come back to that. Okay. A nurse killing a baby. So far you've had. What's creepy is I think even if it's subconsciously, is that they're all trusted people. They're like scouts. Priests, nuns, the priests and nurses that are all children.
LTV, that's great.
See, that's the thing, LTV makes it seem like it's not BBC, but she says at the start that it's the BBC that makes it.
Well.
Anyway. There's a public information film. Uh-huh. There was a series of them about a family of halfwits who drive really dangerously.
Oh, yes.
Remember?
Aren't they called the Twits? They're called something.
And there's one about the dad, there's one about the son, but the one about the mum is because she's not paying attention, she's thinking about the shop and then the dinner, and she drives up on the pavement and she just turns around, she doesn't check. And when she's driving along, she says, "Well, what will we get for the dinner tonight? Maybe a nice bit of fish, or maybe or maybe spaghetti with Brussels sprouts.
Oh, that's odd.
What's that from? Public information.
Public information from.
Pay attention, Craig. The thing is that it's not a comedy meal because none of the other things she talks about
are comedy meals.
No, she doesn't say I'll have pizza chicken and then you know she says I have a nice bit of fish and all that and then she says spaghetti and Brussels sprouts as if that's a thing.
Yeah, it would prompt me to ask another question. Will it be chips or jacket spuds?
Oh, what's the next line?
Will it be salad or frozen peas? Will it be mushrooms?
Dried onion rings?
You'll have to wait and see. Hope it's chips, it's chips.
Okay. Ron says he did consider mash, but you should have seen the state of the potatoes.
Well, fair play to you, Ron.
I mean, when you mashed them.
I would say with a linguine.
I'd say that.
Now, I can see there's an argument for a pasta with it, but I'd go for a shorter pasta, like a penne or a fusilli or something. I wouldn't go for a linguine. Because the linguine, also, linguine I always find a little bit kind of slimy.
Oh, I like linguine.
But a lot of that with...
I like linguine with a pork chop.
Now that is odd. I've never heard of that before. I'm not judging you for that.
Can we just...
is that a monkey over there?
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
Yeah.
So I'm not paying attention, am I?
Can we just talk very
quickly watching the film.
About peach chicken?
Can we talk to Ray Gosling about peach chicken?
Can we talk to Ray Gosling about...
Well, that'd be quite that's what you said. Can we talk to Ray Gosling about
peachy? Can we talk very quickly about peachy chicken?
Oh, peachy chicken.
Peachy chicken
was the... I think I mentioned it before. No, it was. It's worse than Frog a la Pish. It's even worse than Pish a la Frog.
The Blunders family.
The Blunders family. There
you
go.
Thank you, George. Yeah.
It was my sister's ex... Cartina Estate. My sister's ex's family... sister or something. It was their family, anyway. Their speciality de la maison for dinner... was peachy chicken, which was a roast chicken that had a tin of peaches over it, then covered in white sauce.
What do you think of that, Craig?
Which my sister continually said was the single most disgusting thing she'd ever seen. And was served with a terrifying regularity.
See, the point is, that would be disgusting, but it would also look disgusting.
Yeah, because the peaches would all slip down to the bottom. Uh-huh. And then there would be the peach juice and then the white sauce and the gravy. So the bottom of it would actually be like a sort of sweet and sour vomit.
A friend of ours always keeps posting on Facebook all these things from these casserole companies, casserole cooking and whatnot, with how to make... It's an American sort of thing. It's a kind of little short videos for how to make things.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really interesting how many of these American recipes involve processed foods. Mm-hmm. So it's like put three chicken breasts on the bottom, then pour on a can of
absolutely.
Soup,
Or
onion mix.
Well,
what the fuck is that?
But there used to be... My mum used to use occasionally
lots
a tin of
Campbell's
soup.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because
it
was quite thick. But... I've seen, over the years, I've noticed that where there was documentaries about recipes or just documentaries about food, where the ingredients are
foods
things,
in themselves.
Are foods
like,
in themselves.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Which is really odd. It's like, for example, you get a lot of recipes, especially baking recipes, American baking recipes, that will use graham crackers.
Yeah.
Now... What is a graham cracker? It's not a salt. It's not a tongue biscuit.
No, I'm not really sure.
Because that's a saltine.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of...
Because I worked that out.
Can I just chuck in Monterey Jack cheese as well? Yeah,
well,
that in
Monterey Jack cheese is just cheese.
Which one do you want me to talk about first? Because I've got a lot of thoughts on those.
Okay.
Well, when I was on my honeymoon in 2003, we went to San Francisco, and then we spent a few days in Yosemite Park, which was beautiful because it was in January, and it was cold, and there was not many people there, and it was great. Nice. We stayed in a nice sort of motel place on the outside. It was really, really nice.
Actually, about the film, I just want to point out this is one of the logical problems with the film, one of the problems with the Jeopardy Jack of the film, which is that after all that stuff with the babies and all that, he just turns up and when he talks to her, but then talks to the mother, you know, the wife of the mother of the wife of his sidekick, and just says, "No, the wind's fine, we've got him."
That is
there's
odd.
No,
yeah, it
there's no
sense.
Struggle to
no,
get him
absolutely,
to keep him
yeah.
safe. It's just like, no, he's fine. You can't help him now, but you've got to kill him.
Yeah, that's weird.
Anyway,
the thing about
crackers.
I
tell us about your crackers.
We went out for dinner one night in a lovely dining, really nice people as well. And for starters, we had a soup. There's a sort of three courses kind of deal. I love American diners. And they brought us the soup, and they also brought us packets of crackers with them.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which I opened up and dipped in and ate.
Oh, right.
And it was only when I came home, I was re-watching an old X-Files, and Mulder gets the crackers and breaks them up and drops them over the top of it, which is actually quite nice.
Well, the only time I've been to America twice, the first time I went was in 1996, and I had like some sort of chowder.
Mm-hmm.
What's the clam chowder that's tomatoey? There's New England clam chowder and Manhattan clam chowder.
Yeah, I think it's
ones are out. And you got little... We went into this restaurant, and I can't really eat seafood, but it was so processed, I don't think it mattered.
Was it Red Lobster?
And it was... and it just... the stuff, and it was nice. It was sort of slightly fishy, but only in the way that a fish paste kind of thing. It wasn't like overpowered, so it was quite nice.
Tasty.
But all the time I kept looking at these little packets of biscuits, crackers next to it, and so I finished the soup and then ate the crackers,
thinking they were
a wee treat for afterwards.
Yeah.
They said, "No, you're supposed to crumble them over." Yes. So I'm not breaking biscuits into my soup.
It's actually all right though. Yeah.
I'm sure it's lovely.
Another thing about Monterey Jack cheese is that Americans say, "Do you want Jack cheese with that? You're going to have Jack cheese." It's unspeakable. It's horrible.
It is,
processed
it is
shit.
Nice,
yeah. And there are.
It's just bouncy
of,
cheese, isn't it? It's plastic. It's analog cheese.
And they stick a lot of stuff in it. Like, you know, it's got. I don't like things in cheese.
No, neither do I.
I really don't like, you know, like Wednesday deal with cranberries in it. I don't see the point in that. And they put a lot of shit in it, like chilies and whatnot. But however, to be fair...
It's just a host,
exactly. The home of the cheese industry in America is the state of Wisconsin, and there are lots and lots of nice little craft cheese makers. As there are now proper beers in America as well. You can
Wisconsin
actually get lots of nice beer.
The sort of dairy capital of
it
America.
Is, yeah, it's the cheese state.
Which is why Orson Welles never ran for the Senate.
Why isn't ice cream as yellow as it used to be?
Because Orson Welles...
I thought he was from Michigan.
He's from Wisconsin.
Oh.
And he was told that it was better... Roosevelt wanted him to run for the Senate.
Uh-huh.
And it was decided by the Democratic Party that he would be better running in his home state to give him some sort of advantage. But they then said, but you would have to take on the dairy interests, which were what the most popular... And he didn't think he could. So he didn't run. Uh-huh. He said he'd have to have been... They said that he said that you have to have been the greatest campaigner ever, so he didn't run. But then he said, "Well, what if I had been the greatest campaigner?
Mm-hmm.
Because the person who did win was Joseph McCarthy."
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah.
That is top factoid.
Yeah, that is a good fact.
Anyway,
however, why is ice cream not as yellow as it used to be?
I don't think anybody wants it to be that yellow anymore.
It used to be sort of a bit more icy.
Yeah, well, that was be bright yellow.
Yeah, that was just kind of really shitty 70s, 80s process.
That's because you thought it was supposed to.
It was hydrogenated vegetable oil was probably made with, as opposed to the sort of, you know, as of hag tits and arse ice cream onwards, we actually have proper cream in it.
Nice ice cream.
Yeah, it's nice.
Well, ice cream shouldn't have cream in it.
Back in the information exchange, Becca still says, sorry.
What should it have in it? Brussels sprouts.
It's only called ice cream. Originally, it was only called ice cream because it was thick.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't have cream in it.
So what should it have? What should you
it should
it
only
have?
Be made with... I mean, there are...
Full fat milk.
It should be made with milk, full fat milk. But there's two different ways to make it. And I speak as a former ice cream manufacturer. Seriously.
Yeah.
But one of the sort of arsey way is to make it with basically what's a custard base, which is like egg yolk and sugar and things. But that's just the arsey way to do it. Really, it should just be, basically milk and sugar, milk sugar, and a thickener, maybe corn flour, chilled, in a way. And when you churn ice cream, the people who buy ice cream machines, they're a waste of money. There's nothing proper about them because ice cream makers are of no practical use if the blade turns in the bowl. The bowl has to turn round the blade.
Why is that?
The ice crystals, the ice cream, and basically the ice crystals form on the outside. If the blade just goes round inside the bowl, it just begins to form unchurned on the outside of the bowl and work its way in. So the only part that's been mixed is in the middle. The bowl has to move round the blades so that it's constantly been pushed into the middle of the mixture.
And does it have to move sort of slightly off centre so that it...
It doesn't have to be off centre, it just has to be able to...
Right.
It just has to move in so that there's a figure of eight churning motion in the way.
Can I just say, screw all those people who decide to go and watch MasterChef?
Yeah, fuck them.
This is where you get
a horror film,
only person I've ever seen make an ice cream on the telly anyway properly was Raymond Blanc.
The Great Raymond Blanc.
And he made it just with milk, sugar, cornflour, some vanilla, and that's how you make it.
Mike Murafushi wants us to know that tempura Brussels sprouts are divine. I can imagine. I think that would be right.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, you get this nice crisp element.
Well, I remember seeing on...
crispy. Yeah. There's some nice old street action goes on here.
Oh, yeah, that's nice, isn't
so
it?
So where are
looks
we
looks a bit like Edinburgh.
Oh, what's the comic? What's the comic he's got?
I don't know.
It was the Wizard of Chips. It was the core, it's
the crazy comic.
Oh, I'd like to see a bit more of that comic.
That looks a little bit like sort of nice From shot, Beyond the Grave territory, doesn't it?
That's a beautiful shot.
All those houses probably cost about 8 squillion quid now.
Absolutely.
Becca still
big
one.
Big fucking glass cubes off the back.
There'd also be like 3,000 people in that train carriage.
Yeah. Can I just clear up something here? Becca still, back in the when information I exchange, wondered if we'd been commenting on Robert Morley's demise in Theatre of Blood.
Sorry?
Why would she want us to do that? Because
she
you
said,
like.
Sorry, I had to duck out for a bit. Are we commenting on Robert Morley's demise in Theatre of Blood?
Are we weren't, but
he gets
we can.
Fed his puppies.
Fed his own puppies.
In a cake. In a pie.
Actually, I think
it's quite a nice looking pie. Actually.
Yeah, but it's also one of the most horrible of those deaths because you get all that white.
Yeah.
The white. Oh, it's horrible.
But the
it's
first
really
one's
horrible.
Really fucking scary, actually. When
well, the one with Michael Horn
on
the polythene sheet. Yeah. Yeah, it's really horrible.
That was you don't often get like a fade to black.
A fade
like
to black,
that,
yeah.
There is a weird thing. Sorry, this is him getting fucking sconed now.
Yeah.
There is a weird thing in that. not that it's the only problem as a sort of narrative with Theatre of Blood, which is that when he turns up at his house, Robert Morley, and there's all the coppers and all that outside. And not only is Vincent Price waiting in there, but he has an entire film crew. But not just that, he then gets him to take part because he's taking part in That's My Dish.
Yeah.
Which presumes that there is a big programme at the time called
That's My Dish. Yeah, that's true.
And then, but then, is he supposed to look like the host of That's My Dish? It's a wee bit mental. You don't care, because it is mental. But it's also like... you know, like when Coral Brown turns up to the hairdressers and it's like, oh, Butch is going to take her out, the baby, and all that sort of stuff. It's like, well, how does he get in? Where are the other hairdressers?
Yeah, exactly,
Why does she stay? It's all
an
sorts
RTA
of mental.
Award, a road traffic accident award.
The last audience film figures of the year.
My show's going to the top of the ratings, what, even more than Mockham and Wise?
Yeah, that's not very likely.
So does this film have a wider message for humanity then?
Yeah, don't get bummed by Sam Neill.
Don't appear on ITV.
Yeah. or you'll give birth to a baby out of your bum hole.
Out of your bum.
Yeah, you just go for a...
Bum hole's a great word, isn't it?
Right hard shit. It's like, oh.
Oh, you're just being crude now. Bum hole's a good word.
Bum hole.
Bum hole.
Bim holes.
You know what's his name? Rowan Atkinson could make an entire fucking sketch of that. Bum.
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 Oh, let's laugh and run like crazy kids. It's a lot of brown knitwear going on there.
Yeah, I like brown knitwear.
Is that knitted? That it's like a suede blouse.
I think he's got a suede blouse. It is exactly that, a blouse on. With a ribbed waist.
Mm. Now, we've been asked...
I could get away with that.
We've been asked to elaborate what our plans are for what I'm calling Kringard Films' Triple Threat podcast.
Oh, right, okay, yeah. Who's asking that?
Well, I asked people, do you want us to... talk about it. And George White said, yes, we do. Will you do Battle of the Stars now?
No.
So.
Explain.
So this morning we released the commentary for Damien 2, Omen 2. On Wednesday we'll release commentary for this. And then on Friday we will release our special Christmas commentary podcast. And what's so special about it?
Okay. Well, I believe, you just thrown it in the river. I believe that after we have done this live, while you're not listening, we will record a long-awaited, much-promised Christmas treat for me, which is that you're going to show me something without me knowing what it is.
Which is not, can I tell you, it's not Battle Beyond the Stars.
It's not Battle Beyond the Stars.
And it's not
will
Omen,
I know what it is?
Omen,
Yes.
It's not Omen 4.
And I'm not allowed to see the opening of it.
No, and we've pixelated the credits.
Right, okay.
So that you have to see how long it takes you before you realise what it is.
Okay.
But the clue is, the music goes... Ba-da-da, ba-da-da, ba-da-da.
Now, don't be fucking putting that on Facebook, anybody.
If you think you know what it is, you can say that you know what it is.
No, because then you'll see it.
Don't say what it is.
When will I see it?
Don't say what it is.
I'm not going to look at this before we do it now.
No, I'm talking about the comments and the tweets and things.
No one's going
to
get it.
Look, there's about to be some bumming, so I'm not interested in any comments. You know
she's
me.
Going for the wet look.
You know me.
Which is ironic, because the minute he's going for the dry look.
Oh, there he goes. He's giving us a scene too.
Oh, our hair's dried.
It's been blow dried as well.
Oh, right up your dish.
The old
don't stop, Damien.
Silhouetted sex scenes. That was quite a big thing, wasn't it? In the
it needs a saxophone glissando.
Yeah,
like the Careless Whisper video.
So you get a little bit of nudie bits, but not too much nudie bits.
Yeah, you might see
speaking
it.
Speaking of sex,
so they did that on Highlander, didn't they?
They did. Yeah,
sex scene.
Yeah, she had very prominent nipples. I remember when I was a teenager seeing
that. He's getting. Oh, you want to see what I see? I'm going to.
Do you want to see what I see?
I don't know. I can't see my own back.
No. I want you, Damien. No. You might rethink that in a minute.
Oh.
Right. Mind you go.
You want to see what I see? Unless there's a wee telly in the headboard, I'm raging.
You know how you were saying sex and violence helps ratings?
You're hurting me, but...
Birth is pain.
You're hurting me, but... Death oh, actually... Beauty. It's not that bad.
Oh!
Oh, yeah! That's that.
Mind you.
And then coming out's not the worst feeling in the world.
I don't think it would be that pleasant for him either when he's just... She's all right there.
This is not very pleasant, is it?
No, it's not.
No, it's not. But then it's not supposed to be. Mm. Although she does sort of hang about.
There we go. Getting the old.
Now see those. See that bedspread.
Yeah.
With that border on it. We had curtains like those.
Did you? Oh.
Exactly like them.
Look at the state of her back, a dirty bastard.
She's wearing a bra. Does it look like a bra strap? No, I thought it looked like one of those invisible bra straps.
That looks like a mole she's got this. You should get that scene too.
Can we just break in here quickly just to say cheerio to Ron Logan? His dinner is now served.
Enjoy, Ron.
Yeah, thanks.
Are you having a green with that?
Better than that Jamie Oliver
that. Thanks, mate.
Yeah, it's lovely.
That's fucking out of order. Yeah, it's Paladin in the background saying, that's fucking
Merry Christmas, Ron.
Oh, she'd be creeping away. Oh, yeah. On the plus side, she'll find it very easy to have a shit.
That's really bad saying that, actually.
Just saying.
She's going to get a bit of air at it.
Doug's knackered as well. He's had it.
At least I've got a night off, says Doug.
No, I like the armchairs in there, though.
It's a great house, isn't it?
Mm. It's a beautiful house. Nice armchairs.
He's in the kitchen saying, what do you want? Eggs.
She's away there. Her tea for last week's just falling out onto the floor.
And Doug's saying
thump.
Better you than me, love.
Right. Oh, eyes are open. Mm. Oh, that's fine, hen. You're one of us now.
Look at that.
So is that the same balcony then? That
No.
No, it doesn't look like
that.
The
was
same
a white painted one, wasn't it?
Yeah. Oh. But the banister's all wrong.
That could be the back staircase.
She'd recognise that.
This would otherwise be objectionable, but it's just all made up. He didn't really have bum sex with
her. Ah,
come on.
The
it's acting. It's the magic of acting.
Of that through the window. It felt like that. Yeah. Very hard, didn't
yeah.
It? Just
yeah.
A bit of blue, black.
It looks like that sort of blue background you used to get right to the back of the studio in Blue Pier.
Oh, it looks like play school.
Mm.
What's through the rectangular window?
What's through the rectangular
window? Bumming.
Yeah.
She's wearing his nice country shirt, though. That's called a Tattersall shirt, that, isn't it?
Is it?
Watch through the rectal window.
Is it? Right, I think probably, Chris, it's time to...
To what?
It's time for house. What?
No, it's not time for house.
You mean it's time for another window on the Cream Guide films?
By the way, Ron, you know you could actually listen to this while you're having your tea.
Yeah, could.
I wouldn't.
Yeah. Yeah, that's going to make you want to cut up.
There you go.
So let's open up another.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Let's have another inappropriate topic.
Interesting one. Short lived soap operas.
Oh, yeah.
Eldorado's the only one, isn't it?
Well, there are a lot more than that.
Albion Market.
Yeah. Yep. Do you remember how the music to Albion Market used to go?
Badly.
No. It's done on the harmonica, it's lovely.
Yep.
No. Which Northern...
Helen Shapiro.
Yeah, that's right. Which hellish northern of England shithole was it based on? Was it Liverpool?
No, I think it was in Manchester, wasn't it? I think it was a market in Manchester. Because there was definitely an opportunity for there to be a Coronation Street Album Market crossover.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I always hoped that one day you'd just
one of the characters would come into the market. Yeah.
Yeah. And buy something and then dwell for a little bit. And then
now, Wagoner's Walk, that doesn't count as a short-lived one. That went on for quite a while.
Ooh, Wagoner's Walk, that's...
On the radio, that was on the radio.
Yes. Uh-huh.
But that lasted a while, so that doesn't count.
Yeah. El Dorado
obviously lasted pretty much exactly a year.
Mm-hmm.
Can we do impressions for anyone from El Dorado?
Marcos, when will you marry me? Shut
that
it.
That was Mark.
Shut it, Pilar, you slag.
He was.
Jesse Bertel.
Oh, Granada.
Can I just say that I corrected the spelling of Jesse Birdsall's name in a major book.
A major book.
Yeah.
Was it the Complete Guide to Bugs?
No.
Was it Don Quixote?
No, it was the latest volume of The Wife in Space.
Was it? Oh, right.
There you are.
By whom?
Neil Perriman.
All right.
Triangle, short-lived
set. Triangle, yeah. No, absolutely.
Kate O'Mara.
There were a couple of daytime ones. Well, castles.
Well, do you know that wasn't daytime, and also they didn't bill it as a soap, even though it was a soap.
It was a soap.
Was in the years after El Dorado.
Why was that not a daytime?
No, it was. I'm pretty sure that was El Dorado time slot.
No,
and they billed it as a drama, but not a soap.
Well, I could understand that if it was at that time slot, but I don't think it was it?
Yeah, no, it was.
Was Anthony Head not in Castles?
He might have been, actually.
Was there not one as well that was a daytime soap that was about a vicar or something? Vickers or something?
Oh, do you mean Spring Hill, the Sky One soap, which was repeated on Channel
4? Right.
Which was written by Russell T. Davis.
Oh, no, that was Revelations that was written by Russell T. Davis.
No, this is another one. He did Revelations. Right. Revelations was set at a hotel, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't. It was about a bishop.
Hence the name.
That's the one I'm thinking of. Yeah, it was late night. It was quite dirty. Yeah. I used to write... Yeah. For a hospital paper in the Borders.
Yeah.
And I just offered to do a TV column because it was something to do. Uh-huh. And I used to write about Revelations most weeks, and it became quite sort of popular with folk who would pick it up with me because I got people watching it.
Uh-huh.
It was quite dirty. There was quite a lot of nudity in it.
Spring Hill was really good.
Now,
there was an episode of Spring Hill where one of the characters
got
knocked down, and then the whole episode, I think, was the last minutes of their life flashing by them.
Hmm. Now, here's a... This is open to discussion.
Uh-huh.
Does the return of Crossroads count as short-lived?
I think it probably does, don't you think?
I think it probably does.
In part because of the terrible ending.
Well, it was all a Jane Asher's dream at the checkout in a supermarket.
Which was awful. Now, do you remember this one, Night and Day?
Is that the one I talked about earlier?
So Night and Day...
That was a comedy series I talked about.
So Night and Day was... it was a weird thing, which was... It was a daytime soap opera.
Uh-huh. And they did Set at night?
No, but they did a late night repeat with extra scenes.
Oh! When was that on?
Okay.
That would be on early 2000s.
Was it a bit like Pebble Mill?
Saturday Night in the Mill?
Yeah.
What about Trainer? That was kind of a soapy.
Yeah, I suppose.
What was that?
That was like Howard's Way, which we should also talk about, but with horses.
Howard's Way wasn't short-lived.
No, Howard's Way lasted.
It wasn't a soap either, it was a serial, wasn't it?
That would be another sort of fine edge point.
Chris, big fan of Ken Masters?
Big fan of Ken Masters? Who wouldn't be? Who wouldn't be a big fan of Ken Masters? It's a Dusty Baby.
Oh, Dusty Baby. He was the last word in Suave, wasn't he?
He certainly was. Yeah. I hope to grow up to be like him or Peter Bowles.
He spent most of it walking about in a sort of white toweling bathrobe with a glass of champagne in his hand.
He did, indeed.
And he was very wet. He had a very wet mouth.
Yeah, he did have a very wet mouth and rolled
his
legs.
It was slightly open like that.
Then they spent a lot of time on boats.
Yeah. Then it would cut to Glenn Houston, what his name was, going, Jack Roth! Was that his name?
Yes, it was Jack Roth. And his daughter was Admiral.
Was it Glenn Houston?
It was Glenn Houston.
Jack, I've been building boats for 40 years! God damn it, you don't build a boat that way!
I always just wonder who the fuck was buying all these boats.
Because
not only were they building boats, they had no trouble in selling, but their major problems were that other yards were building better boats.
Yeah, yeah.
Just like there were these people roaming about the south coast of England trying to find best boats. It was
a metaphor for the sort of the bespoke British car industry.
It was
like
extraordinary.
Bristol Beaumonts and Jensen Interceptors.
It's like you couldn't build a swanky enough boat for these cunts.
Who played Charles Frere? Do you remember? Wasn't it Tony Anholt?
It was Tony Anholt.
Yeah.
Look, if she had done her wifely duty and hung that up properly, she wouldn't have needed to iron it.
Wow. She's very angry, isn't she?
She's very angry.
And also, the other problem with Howard's Way was that Morris Colburn died, didn't he?
He did, quite young, isn't he? Tom Hardy, 50 or something.
Now, who else was in that? There was
Jan Harvey,
but also...
Well, there was the dippy young couple.
Dulcy Gray, that's it.
There was the dippy young couple who was Leo. And Abby. And she had a bit of a sort of Shelley Duvall thing going.
Yeah.
And he was really sort of dippy.
He was very wet.
He was really drippy. Then there was the blonde woman with the big Charlies, who was the daughter, who was going out with Tony Anholt.
Oh,
and she fell in the dock when she saw him shagging his ex-wife.
Was she Lynn?
I think so.
Tracy Childs.
Tracy Childs, that's right. And I think her and Tony Anholt got together in real life. Yeah.
Sorry, this is the bit where he says, "Your Wayne's fine. The baby's fine. It's everyone's going to be fine."
Oh, hang on. Apparently it was Glyn Owen, not Glyn Houston.
Oh, was it? Oh, that's a downer, actually. There you go. Because it would have been better if it had been Glyn Houston.
No, we used to watch that.
In this very house.
Yeah, loved
what was the end music like?
Oh, well, it depends which series we're talking about.
Yeah.
Because everyone remembers, wasn't it?
Always there, your love.
Now, at Rose, Rose, who was joined us the other week, at her school, they turned that into a hymn.
Oh, right.
And the words were, always there, never God's love is always there.
God is never
the closing
there.
Music in my mind goes... What was the other one like?
What?
You said it depended on what series.
Well, because it was always there.
Because then it was always there.
No, that was... No. Oh, you're getting it wrong. Always there was the opening music.
Stop getting Howard's way wrong.
There was times when it was the closing music.
I think that's true.
Yeah, wasn't always that music at the end.
Yeah, you're right. It was an instrumental in the opening music.
Then it was the theme at the well. The
God, that's good, isn't it?
But do you know what made that the upbeat end thing so good?
What?
Was in the end, it does segue back into the dominant Howard's Way theme, doesn't it?
Quite right.
Which is what you want.
When did that finish? About
1878.
Was it as late as that?
I think so.
It was a real Thatcherite soap, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But equally. Interestingly, also, it was kicked off by him being paid off.
It was.
He was an aircraft engineer, wasn't he?
What's the boat called? The Barracuda?
I don't care what it was called. Yeah, it's a stupid name for a boat. We never called it Barracuda in my days. We called it stuff like the Darky Slayer.
After all of that, we have to point out that wasn't a short-lived soap.
No,
it was
a series.
That was a very long.
But we did enjoy talking about it.
But it was a soap.
We did enjoy talking about it.
There were the American buy-ins, brilliantly Santa Barbara, which was one of my favourites, made by the Johnsons. And there was
the Colbys. That was short-lived, reasonably short-lived.
Colbys was comparatively short. That wasn't short-lived.
No,
that lasted a long time.
Ewing. My favourite of the Ewings.
Can anybody remember all of the surnames for Alexis? Alexis Carrington.
Carrington Colby.
Do you know what always
Carrington,
throws me off?
Colby,
and
Dexter.
You'll hear it when I try and do this. Carrington Colby Dexter Fletcher.
Yay.
Oh, wow.
I can't help but say that.
But that was
Hugh Morale as well.
That was the joke when Patty and Selma and The Simpsons became when she married Sideshow Bob. Uh-huh. Whose second name was Dewillica, so she became Patty Dewillica, Patty Bouvier Dewillica, Troy McClure, because she married about six times. She was like Alexis. She had hundreds of second names, two of which were Dewillica.
Over at the Information Exchange, most of the things that people have mentioned we've covered. Just worth saying that Gareth Hunt and Lizette Anthony were in Night and Day. That's true. Yeah, I remember that. George White says, "Does anyone remember Glen Roe, which was an Irish soap film near his school?"
No, it won't be shown here.
Hang on, it said long-running in Ireland, short-lived on ITV. So presumably it wasn't
there. It wasn't there.
Cyril Cusack was in it.
David Kelly
was in it. Yeah.
Do you remember nineties film? Quite big cinema release film. Lizette Anthony turned up in.
Nineties.
Yeah.
Did she have her own voice?
Yeah. She did American accent in it. She played Sydney Pollock's bit on the side in Husbands and Wives, the Woody Allen film that he leaves Judy Davis for.
Wow.
And of course, as I alluded to there in Krull, she had her voice dubbed.
By someone famous?
Nah.
Because in Greystoke, Andy McDowell's voice is Glenn Close.
That's
is it?
Yeah.
So what was Lizette Anthony's best performance there?
Three up, two down.
I think you'll find.
And do we remember the music to that?
That sounds like Spider-Man.
That's a bit, isn't it? Yeah. That is the quintessential sitcom theme music. Isn't
well,
it?
I'm not sure.
Except does it have the key change at the end?
No, it doesn't. No, because what happens is it goes. And then goes there'd be jazz riff on the piano.
But we don't get a key change.
Ray Burgess, now a film director of shite films, like the Wee Man and things like that.
That's right. Sitcom theme, but add your three up, two down, probably because I was Ronnie Hazelhurst theme. But
oh yes, it was.
Fresh Fields has the best theme, but of course it's an old song. So
yes,
but it does have the.
But there's a key change at the end.
But well, not only does it have a key change, but it's long enough to have a build up.
Oh right.
So it doesn't just start. Because it starts off with ba 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 da ba da 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 da
da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da
da da da da da
da da da da da da da da
Oh, I've got an idea.
It's from Camelot.
Is it?
The problem with May to December is it went...
Oh, there you go, it's been stabbed.
Oh.
Are we there already?
Yeah. Wow. It went whimsical.
He goes, there we go.
The problem is it went whimsical.
Didn't they?
He
was
whimsical and went wrong. Because it started off, it used to have that brilliant actor, Clive Thingy, that was, because there was...
Mantle?
They were called Merison? Like... Not Dunn? Mantle.
Of India? Cussler?
He turns up in Yes Prime Minister the odd time, and he was just beginning to make like Get Big and he died,
right?
Yeah.
Oh dear.
In May to December it starts off because the fud was called
the fud,
was it Miles and Henty or something was the name of the firm.
Uh-huh.
The firm. And Anton Rogers was one partner and he was the other partner. And he was like, he was dead smooth and he was always out shagging and that sort of thing.
Okay.
And he was really, and he was actually the comedy one. Uh-huh. But then he died before they made either the second or third series. Eventually...
Jesus has turned up, mate.
I don't know how you did. And then it turned whimsical. It became about...
See, this is a bit weird.
Sorry, we do need to cut to the film here.
Sorry.
So, Craig, what the hell is going on? This just seems
The film's finished, basically, what we're talking about.
And so what happened?
May to December.
May to December.
She stabbed him.
Stabbed the wee guy.
Jesus has appeared.
That wee guy's dead, yeah.
Turned out Jesus
Nazarene,
turned up
you have won nothing. He's turned up and said, actually, I've won the whole shebeen. And
the music does get quite holy here.
It gets
here.
And
it slightly resembles the closing titles of... Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy with the
well,
sort of building.
The other thing is that the boy's dead.
Aye, that's a bit weird.
And you kind of think that he's going to go, oh, that's
oh,
him alive.
What's happened?
No, he's still dead.
And so that sort of epilogue of her walking away, there's a bit weird, really.
Yeah, it's a bit weird.
And who's this?
Well, I think it must be the old priest.
It's not Jesus, is it?
And is that your actual Jesus?
I never thought of that. Maybe it is.
Oh. Is that your actual Jesus, then, who's in this?
Oh, maybe it is. Yeah. Maybe you're meant to think it is. Well, he's not much fucking use then, is he? He's still, the wind's still dead.
I know, it says now it's all going to be fine. For the former things are passed away.
Yeah, well, that's just all the mental shit.
Until someone has a bum baby.
Yeah. The minute the bum baby comes out,
it's all gonna,
he'll be forgetting all about May to December.
Coming out like the rain in V.
You got right into the May to December zone there, didn't you?
Yeah, Chris loves
it. Just when you're trying to remember.
He likes it so much that when Jesus turned up, he wasn't that bothered.
Yeah, that bothered.
He's no Anton Rogers.
Jesus versus Anton Rogers. I know he wins that one.
So that's the Omen film's finished.
Yeah, that's the Omen trilogy finished.
Maud Spector.
We're
coming to the end of our Facebook Live Odyssey here with this.
Because I want to know the name of that actor.
Which actor?
The one that was in...
Come on, George. One last time. In May to December. George, we need some casting information on May 7th.
Sorry,
we can do this.
Trying to see any names coming up here.
Craig, reflections on the Omen trilogy, please.
Yeah, I mean, they're great, aren't they?
Uh-huh.
They're hokey and a bit hen-speckled, but they're just great films. They're big films in our lives, I would say. Well, certainly in mine. I can't speak for you guys, but I just mean in terms of our lifetimes.
Uh-huh.
They were enormous films. Growing up, I'd have been about 11 when I finally saw this one, because we had a video. So, I've watched these fucking hundreds of times. You know, I've got the DVD box set and all that. It's fucking
Clive Francis.
Clive Francis.
May to December for 5 years.
Norman Bird.
He's still on May to December, by the way.
It wasn't much cost.
It's like last year when he was talking about chocolate boxes. Remember?
Do you know what's good about, and my only sort of feeling about Anton Rogers in those programmes?
He sucked you into his mate's
sense. Yeah, but the same with Fresh Fields. It was like when people in sitcoms had proper jobs. And he'd come home to his massive fucking house in the suburbs, which he was able to afford at that stage. Now he wouldn't.
Well, he was a senior partner in a pretty successful law firm.
Yeah, but now he'd probably live in a fucking glass box in Shoreditch or some shite like that.
Yeah, that's true.
But, and he goes home, you know, and he'd come in his three-piece suit. He'd look a bit careworn and haggard. And, you know, he'd put his briefcase down. His wife's pretty fucking mental, frankly, and she's never worked a lick in her life. And he'd get home and he'd imagine the first thing he'd, he would get a nice gin and tonic or a whiskey and sit down with the tie undone and take a wee look at his paper or watch a bit of the news or something, waiting for the missus to cook the sausage casserole with linguine in the kitchen. Did he die young?
Is this the is except this
there's a photograph of him looking quite old.
No, no, the character died young. No.
So we've actually come to the end of the film.
He looked fucking terrible right enough by the time he died. Yeah.
Anyway,
I was just saying, you know, that's kind of like what sitcoms had in those
unless you were Anton Rogers and Fresh Fields, in which case Hester had all sorts of crazy crazy business for you to do.
No sausage casserole for you because
because I've just started a catering business
with linguine or with mash or with any other kind.
And she would be catering while running on a jogging machine.
Yep, and trying to flip a pancake.
Yeah,
and then there's French Fields, wasn't there, with Nicholas Coleman?
Oh no, that was shit.
What was her name next door again?
Sonia. It's only me, Sonia. Yeah. Joint account. Fucking love that as well. Peter Egan and and Gloria Hannaford.
Peter Egan cares about the Bears.
Not Gloria Hannaford.
What he does?
From Pilton.
Her from
Hannah
the
Gordon.
Staff of the Hannah, Elephant Hannah Man. Gordon. Yeah, Hannah Gordon.
Yeah. What about Don't Wait Up? I can never quite get into Don't Wait Up.
Oh, I liked Don't Wait Up. Do you know what I remember most about Don't Wait Up? Now here's a car thing. Nigel Havers had the wee Mini. And his dad, Tony Britton, had the big Rolls Royce, remember? And he was always like, you know...
Because he was a private...
Wentworth at 8 o'clock or
because he was a private doctor on Harley Street. And his son just insisted on being a GP.
Who was the sort of love interest in Don't Wait Up Again?
The young love interest?
Yeah, because he had his ex-wife who was...
His ex-wife was probably actually was Dulcy Gray.
Was it? No. I mean...
They were both divorced.
Nigel Havers' ex-wife was...
was it Anthony?
Was Den Watts' bit on the side? Same actress with the red hair.
Jan.
Yeah, her.
Somebody.
But then, of course, later on, his girlfriend, who was nicked by Wixie, was that woman with the Polish name who in real life was the partner of Richard Whiteley.
Oh, that's...
she was a really nice woman. And
but the point of Don't Wait Up was that the two of them were divorced.
That's right, yeah. Well, he was sort of separated from Dulcy Gray, wasn't... Is it Dulcy Gray?
Yeah, I think it was Dulcy Gray.
And she was just basically fucking...
It was either Dulcy Gray or fucking Googie Weathers or something like that.
I just noticed a massive oversight.
Which is?
We've never heard Craig do a trumpet rendition of the theme to Just Good Friends.
I thought it
Just
was...
Good Friends? Oh, yeah, that's...
But that's jazzy enough as it is. Give me a challenge, like a trumpet jazz version.
What about a trumpet jazz
the
version?
Omen.
What about a trumpet jazz version of the theme tune for A Fine Romance?
Right, should we end it on that?
Well, do you want the Omen one before you go?
Yeah, go on, do the Omen then.
Ding, ding, ding. Give it then.
Right.
I've gone into Come Out of Banana.
Right then.
All right, bye. Bye. Merry Christmas.
You keep saying bye.
Jesus has risen. Bye. 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 Bye.